them a call at 831-620-1700 or visit Renovations on their website at renovations.net. This program is also brought to you by the Monterey Bay Area Green Business Program. Green businesses go beyond recycling to reduce waste and prevent pollution and conserve both energy and water resources. Shop green, and for more details and a list of the green businesses, visit their website at MontereyBayGreenBusinesses.org.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area.
Thank you, Spencer, for coming in today.
Thanks, Mel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton go at it one more time in Montana and South Dakota tomorrow. She spent most of her late campaigning efforts in South Dakota. He is in Michigan today doing general campaign stuff, his eyes on John McCain and November.
There are a lot of superdelegates who are waiting for the last couple of contests, but I think that we're going to be making decisions fairly quickly after that.
Clinton supporters couldn't wait to see her at a restaurant here, but spoke as if Barack Obama has won.
If that's the way it ends up, they'll support the Democratic candidate.
This woman, Jennifer Bauman Holick, wouldn't back Obama right now.
He talks well, he says all the right things, but I just don't feel confident.
Clinton tried boosting spirits.
I really was impressed by the downtown and all of the sculptures that you're placing on every corner.
She wishes there would be one of her here someday. They're sculptures of presidents. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Rapid City, South Dakota.
The first of more than 400 children of polygamy are being reunited with their parents in Texas.
Julie Balovich represents many of the parents.
My clients are incredibly grateful, and they really hope that the children get to stay with them.
But the investigation into abuse will continue, and the judge ordered parents not to interfere with that. Marley Meisner of Child Protective Services admits it's been a tough case.
Emotionally, it's been difficult, but our staff remain committed.
The judge's order allows child protective workers to make unannounced visits to the families to check on the children's well-being. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, San Angelo.
Senator Ted Kennedy's brain surgery went well, though his doctors don't say whether they got all the glioblastoma, the cancer, out of his brain or not. At Duke University, CBS's Jim Crisula.
Senator Ted Kennedy's brain surgery is being called a success. The 76-year-old was in the operating room here at Duke University Medical Center for 3.5 hours. He's expected to be treated here for a week or so, then head back to Boston for radiation and chemotherapy.
TV star Kelsey Grammer had a heart attack during the weekend in Hawaii. He'd been out paddleboarding with his wife Camille when the pain hit.
The news is good. It was a mild heart attack, and he is doing very well.
Entertainment Tonight's Mary Hart. The space shuttle backflip, just 600 feet from the International Space Station, has become a regular feature of docking. Gives the crew on the station a chance to take lots of high-res pictures of the underside of the shuttle for any signs of damage during the ascent. And it's a cool maneuver. The shuttle has brought with it a school bus-sized science lab from Japan. And what has to be priority number one, the new toilet pump. Federal and state agents in New Jersey have arrested Vincent and Chantal Estevez on charges of running $1 million a week cocaine smuggling operation out of their mansion in the Jersey horse country. Investigators say the man had 100 Rolex watches. Wall Street, the Dow lost 134 points today. The Nasdaq down about 31. This is CBS News.
They say a man should always dress for the job he wants. So why am I dressed up like a pirate in this restaurant? It's all because some hacker stole my identity. Now I'm in here every evening serving chowder and iced tea. Should have gone to freecreditreport.com. I could have seen this coming at me like an atom bomb. They monitor your credit and send you email alerts, so you don't end up selling fish to tourists in t-shirts.
Offer applies with enrollment and triple advantage.
Ha! Look at that!
What?
The Nuvi! This is precisely why I subscribed to MSN Direct when I bought this Garmin Nuvi 780.
What is it?
A traffic backup right there on our route.
What do we do?
We avoid it.
How?
The Nuvi simply directs us to the best alternate route, huh?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
To receive MSN Direct traffic content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com. Follow the leader.
Bo Diddley, for whom the term music legend is spelled in caps, has died. CBS's Nick Young.
His first hits came in 1955, but not everyone was a fan.
Women was running around talking about my musical, the daughters to get pregnant, and all sorts of stuff. Papers with, don't bring that music to my city.
But the music, with its boasting vocals and bump and grind rhythms, turned him into one of the founding fathers of rock and roll.
I'm a man. I spell M.
Everyone from Connie Francis to Carlos Santana to the Rolling Stones would record his songs. Aware that his influence on others actually surpassed his own commercial success, Diddley would remark, "I opened the door for a lot of people, and they ran through and left me holding the knob."
Bo Diddley was 79. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Linda, please, could you make some more copy paper appear?
Appear? Just look on the shelf over the copier.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Linda, my phone's broken. Can you cast some sort of spell to fix it?
It was just unplugged.
Oh, my gosh, you're a wizard.
Hey, Linda, can you work your magic on this paper jam?
Can you help me win this lottery scratch-off game?
Okay.
Linda, my cat's sick. Can you heal her?
I am an office manager. All I did was take our empty HP-compatible ink cartridges...
And you turned them into money. We know.
Yeah.
No. I took them to Staples and got $15 back in rewards.
She went to Staples and they paid her rewards. Now that's power.
It's not magic. Just recycle your Office Depot, Office Max, or other store brand HP compatible ink or toner cartridges at Staples. Purchase $25 of HP original cartridges and get $15 back in Staples rewards. Not a rewards member? Join today. It's free. Staples. That was easy. Limit 2 recycled cartridges per rewards account. Limited time offer valid in U.S. stores only.
Not him again.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
I can't find that on the radio. Y'all turn to that station.
Thanks for turning to this station. We know you have choices in Radio Land, from the Savage Nation to Ditto Head Central.
World is collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio. I can't hear it. And I got to the house and I called you out. You could tell she had been crying.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, originating from San Francisco.
Makes me
and I'm looking at the schedule of guests here today, and perhaps we should dub this Hot New Books Day. Rory O'Connor is here at my secret studio. His new book is called Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio. We're going to light up the phones this hour. Next hour, there's a new book out. It's a collection of commentaries called Intersection, and its editor, Nicole Mauro, will join us, along with writer Melissa Ngo. It's N-G-O. That's how she spells her name. And she's written a powerful piece about surveillance cameras that are really proliferating across the United States. And she makes the point that you no longer have an expectation of privacy when you are in public. Does that scare you? Does it make you shudder? Does it make you think Big Brother? Or just make you want to repeal the Patriot Act? Well, we'll talk with them coming up next hour. And then Jeffrey Feldman returns to our program. He talks about rhetoric, language, and framing. His website is frameshopisopen.com. And his new book talks about the poison language of the far right. It's called Outright Barbarous, How the Violent Language of the Right Poisons American Democracy. And the subtitle creep is just over the edge, but we'll allow it once in a while. Also on today's program, the new Speaker of the California Assembly, a first African-American woman in that post, Karen Bass, will join us. We're going to talk about the huge budget gap here in California and whether Arnold's lottery play will actually get passed and end up helping solve some of those issues. That
That's all ahead, and you can call into this program at any time, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, and that's peter at peterbcollins.com. Roy O'Connor's been a frequent guest on our program together with Danny Schechter. He's at the mediachannel.org Global Center for
Media and Global Vision.
Global Vision. And you have 94 websites. You're cutting down?
I think we're down to 93 this week.
Well, Rory, it's great to see you in the flesh. You're here in California on a book tour, big launch party for your book about shock jocks, published by Alternet Books.
Yes, it's true. Alternet.org. If you want to go there right now, you can go order the book even as we speak.
Well, we're going to give away some copies, and I hope it doesn't dent sales too much. But here's how it's going to work here until we run out of books. You call in, and you name the most virulent and obnoxious right-wing talk show host who's in national syndication. Sorry, leave the local yokels out. And if you name somebody who is profiled in the book, we'll give you a copy of the book, and then we will proceed to talk about that talk show host. 888-5-PETER-B, you can call in right now, and we've got five free copies of the book to give away to the people who can play along with the system I just announced. So 888-5-PETER-B, tell us the most obnoxious right-wing host. And Rory O'Connor, how long did you have to listen to these wing nuts to put together the research for this powerful new book?
Well, there's two answers to that question, Peter. One is you don't have to listen very long to understand, as I begin in the introduction of my book, that America, we have a problem. Yeah. It's quite apparent within the first 30 seconds of listening to many of these talk show hosts that we have a severe problem in America. The talk radio, in the words of Senator Trent Lott, of all people, talk radio is running America, and we have to deal with that problem. Mm-hmm. Of course, doing the research for the book, yes, I had to spend hours and hours listening to them. And the more I listened, the less I knew.
Yeah. Now, did you do what Robert Greenwald did for Outfoxed and line up a bunch of volunteer deputies to listen to this stuff and just send you the worst of it? Or did you actually get in the trenches and put on the headphones yourself?
Well, I got in the trenches, yes. I want to also mention Aaron Cutler, who I wrote the book with, who helped me out quite a bit. And also there are a couple of places that I want to recommend to anybody who wants to quickly hear and see, in many cases, exactly what these jamokes are up to. Media Matters for America, as you know, does a very good job of monitoring what they do on a daily basis and providing direct links to the audio and sometimes to the video of these shock jocks.
Yeah. Well, and I think that has provided the first real check, because for the longest time, people like Rush Limbaugh operated with impunity. The only tapes they made were their own tapes. And, you know, occasionally somebody would get all worked up. But I learned this in the radio business a long time ago, Rory, that when people hear something, what you actually said is far less offensive than what they think they heard. And so at radio stations, we've always had evidence tape machines that roll 24 hours, and when something goes wrong, the management pulls out that recording, and inevitably, in my experience, what people heard was much worse than what I actually said. And so you could get away with a lot of things, and very, very rarely would you be called to task. But Media Matters, I think, does an important job of putting people like Savage and Limbaugh and others on notice that they're being monitored on a daily basis. And when Limbaugh goes off on Michael J. Fox, it no longer happens just inside the ditto head bubble.
Well, and also, you know, Rush in particular, but many of these guys are expert at claiming that they didn't say what in fact they did say. You know, you talk about Michael J. Fox, and of course Rush was making fun of him for having Parkinson's disease. Now, when he was later and rightly attacked quite widely for doing that, his first response was, well, I didn't say that. But of course, when you go to Media Matters for America and you click on the audio link to the Rush Limbaugh show, you find out, in fact, he did say that. And as a matter of fact, I would say that in many cases, what people heard was not as bad as what they actually said.
Very well put, and probably quite accurate. Now, how did Don Imus get caught? he was saying nasty things, a lot of racial and racist, I make a distinction there, comments over a long period of time. And Rory, one of my pet theories here is that we've seen white guys get in trouble when they attempt to act black. When, you know, they're trying to channel Chris Rock or somebody like that. And I think that's what happened to Imus. He thought he was talking to, you know, 24-year-old African-American kids in New York in their language when he referred to the Rutgers women's basketball team as nappy-headed hoes.
Well, famously, yes. But, of course, when you get down into the details, you find that Don Imus had a 20-year history of saying things like this. And it's not just racist, also sexist, homophobic, xenophobic. And I think how he got caught was what I call in the book the perfect media storm. You know, he said the things that he said. If he had said them 10 years ago, before the day of the 24/7 news cycle, before the day of the internet and constant access to all this, this would not have become as big a story as it was. In addition, let's remember that this happened on a Friday of Easter weekend, so it was what we call a slow news day. So his remarks, which went out in the morning over his radio show, were picked up very rapidly by people who monitor this. They were then amplified in the blogosphere, and then it moved over to cable news. And it didn't go away because there was really no other big news or no other big news narrative for the entire Easter weekend. So by the time Monday rolled around, this had gone from Don Imus making some remarks on his radio show to becoming, you know, a huge national story. It was running, as I'm sure you recall, on CNN and on MSNBC almost nonstop. And then there were more and more additions to the narrative. And, of course, let's not forget that the young women and the coach of the Rutgers women's basketball team comported themselves with great dignity as opposed to Don Imus. So,
or Governor Corzine, who cracked up his SUV on the way to a meeting to try to broker some peace.
Precisely. So you then had, in a way, the beauties and the beast. You know, it started falling into these almost mythic media narratives. So, ironically, Imus was, in a sense, hoisted by his own media petard in the end.
Let's go to Brian in Arcata, who joins us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Say hello to Rory O'Connor. Brian?
Good afternoon, Rory.
Good afternoon to you. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Peter B.
All right, so who is the most evil right-wing talk radio host in your view, Brian?
Well, I would have to say Michael Savage. I think it's not only what he says, but how he says it with such anger and vitriol.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm right there with you. I actually think that of all the people on radio, that he crosses the line into a kind of twisted psychosis and really, you know, empties his venom in a way that does cross that line into hate speech. I don't consider him a principled conservative. I do consider him a raving nut. And,
yeah.
Rory, I've made this comment before, but I like to say it as carefully as I can, because I believe that the programmers and managers who choose to put on a show like Michael Savage make the same kind of decision that a pornographer makes about what to put on the cover of Hustler or Penthouse or something like that. I may not be into this particular kind of sexuality, says the publisher, but I know it sells. And I think that radio managers make that same decision that, oh, yeah, I think he's beyond the pale. I think he goes over the edge. But it's an easy way to make money, and that's what I'm here for.
Well, I think there's no doubt about that. You know, you brought up pornography. I'm sure you remember the very famous cover image of Hustler magazine of a naked woman's body being run through a meat grinder.
Yeah.
And, you know, Michael Savage is essentially the sonic equivalent of that image.
Mm-hmm. Brian, did we get your address yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, then I'm going to put you on hold when we're finished, and Katrina will get your address, and we'll mail you a copy of this new book, Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio. You want to add anything else about Michael Savage? Maybe something recently you heard or something that you'll never forget?
Well, not particularly about him, but about my hope that with the power that talk radio has in this country, that we'll be able to recreate a balanced playing field in the future.
Well, we're going to talk about that because Rory's book is not just one of these tabloid exploitations of nasty people. He goes into detail about the old fairness doctrine and prospects for a new one being reinstated. And he also talks about the growth of progressive talk radio. So I think it's an interesting book because it covers the landscape pretty well. So a little later this hour, we will talk about fairness doctrine and other ways to try to re-regulate the radio business to put some balance into it. Brian,
that
thanks.
Sounds fantastic.
Thank you for calling in. Good to have you listening.
Thanks.
And we'll take a break and return in just a moment with Rory O'Connor. Again, the new book is Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio, just published today from Alternet Books. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Our schools are in trouble. Healthcare is a mess. The economy is broken. I get it. But we can get California back on track. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm running for state assembly because we can't send more politicians to Sacramento. I'm a leader in a group fighting foreign corporate control of our water, and we're winning. I was twice elected to our local school board, balancing budgets in tough times and seeing the kids didn't fall through the cracks. I started a green technology business, creating jobs with full health care benefits. And I was trained in making good public policy by Leon Panetta at the Panetta Institute. We can do a better job in California. We can grow our economy by investing in college education and green technology. But we need leaders who get it and who can get the job done. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm ready to get the job done for all of us. I would be honored to have your vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd. This message was paid for by my campaign, Spranger 2008.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I'm Peter B. Collins, and I got a question. When does free expression under the First Amendment cross the line into hate speech? And when does that become in conflict with our First Amendment? Get back to me in about a week and a half, will you? O'Connor has a powerful new book out about the shock jocks. Hate Speech Radio, Hate Speech and Talk Radio is the subtitle, fresh out from Alternet Books. We're giving away copies to listeners. Michael Savage has been identified by Brian and Arcata as his most offensive right-wing talk show host, and I concur. Here's a clip from a recent outrage, an outburst from Michael Wiener Savage, who took the opportunity when Ted Kennedy was still in the hospital to play music by the dead Kennedys and basically wish for his demise.
Who is the real Ted Kennedy? The real Ted Kennedy? Well, the leftist media in this nation has erupted in praise of Ted Kennedy. Democrats praise him, Republicans praise him, liberals praise him, conservatives praise him. But simply because a man has a serious health problem, does that mean that all criticism must stop permanently? His legacy must be rewritten? Does a man who spent his entire political life destroying the fundamental tenets of American morality become miraculously rehabilitated simply because he entered the hospital? Do so-called conservatives stop being conservative because of a medical diagnosis?
All right, if you want to hear more, go to your favorite Savage Nation station, but I can't take much more, and I don't really want to hear him play the dead Kennedys because I like the dead Kennedys, and they don't belong on the Savage Nation. Now, Rory, give us a little context here. In the book, you profile Michael Savage, birth name Wiener, and he used to be a beatnik who hung out in North Beach here in San Francisco.
Yes, he used to be a beatnik. He used to have a different name. He used to do a lot of things differently, and he seems to have changed. The question is why. I think the answer is money. I think that Michael has clearly come to the conclusion that by being outrageous, simply by exposing himself and getting more exposure, hence more listeners, hence more advertising, that was the way to go. So he abandoned his past. He abandoned his family, if you will. He abandoned his religion, and he has done a 180, and he has, you know, basically gone over to the dark side.
And Dr. Savage's doctorate is in Soviet...
He is a legitimate ethnobotanist. He's written 19 books, on herbal issues and medicine. And
but like Dr. Lara, his doctorate has nothing to do with what he actually presides over on the radio.
Yes, like Dr. Kissinger.
We have Jennifer in Ferndale. Thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having this guest on. Rory, you're awesome. I love talk radio. I've been listening for years, and my nomination is Rush Limbaugh, not just because of what he did over the Michael J. Fox thing, because that was bad, but just the fact that he did this whole process of getting people to vote for Hillary and disturbing our process, of voting.
Operation Chaos, you're referring to.
Yes. I mean, and then I listened to him the next day for about a minute, which is more than I can stand, and he said he did it on purpose. idiotic, and this guy's a drug addict, hypocritical windbag who is allowed to go on and on and on with all of this.
But Jennifer, you have missed the critical point, and Rory identifies it in his book. What is Rush Limbaugh about, Rory? Conservatism, America, or Rusty?
is about Rush Limbaugh and only about Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, you make a great point that Rush basically has seized upon what is in the news. And, you know, in this case, it was the Democratic primary process continuing. And he injected himself firmly into the middle of it, clearly for the sole purpose of promoting Rush Limbaugh and his radio program and the mainstream media, which, you know, is one of the few things that Rush and I perhaps agree on. He calls it the drive-by media. We both hold them in disdain. They just seized upon what Rush was doing, wrote about him, and gave him lots of free publicity.
And he can call for riots in Denver without any repercussions, but gosh, a visiting pastor at Trinity Church, we got to hear all about it. Jennifer, thanks for your call. Hold on, we'll get you a copy of the new book, Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio. More with Rory O'Connor, next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
The Osgood File. This is Dave Ross, and for Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. It's been almost 39 years since I heard a bunch of my fellow high school grads talking about this cool festival they planned to go to in upstate New York. It would be peace, love, and music. But I had a summer job, so did my girlfriend, and so we stayed home. And now, just like that, it's 39 years later, and Woodstock is a museum.
It's a very immersive, rich media experience.
Okay, a media experience. That's what I meant to say. More after this.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger than life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Experience the joy of designing your own ring at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Even though Jared has an incredible selection of spectacular diamond engagement rings, many Jared customers prefer to design their own. It's easy to understand why. You can select from hundreds of settings in gold or platinum at Jared, and then choose from thousands of diamonds in a wide variety of shapes and sizes to create a ring that's yours and yours alone.
It can only be Jared!
I did go to Woodstock 94, the 25th anniversary of the original, which provided some of the music and all of the mud. But by then, I was past the age when mud was fun. The new Woodstock Museum that opens today is happily mud-free. Mike Egan is senior director of the museum at Bethel Woods.
Woodstock has come to represent much of the 60s. It's much of the ideals and the ideas and the music and the transformation of a very dynamic time.
Yes, it was a time when the sheer number of people under 30 became a social and economic force so powerful that no chain link fence could contain it. In fact, the museum includes a stretch of that fence, along with 20 films, and a 50-foot-high wraparound screen that finally shows Jimi Hendrix actual size. And of course, there are the usual holy relics.
The electric piano that Sha Na Na played on stage. We have the crazy, kooky overalls that Wavy Gravy walked around in. We have the equivalent of text messages today, which were, guess what? Text messages then written on pie plates or whatever kids could find.
And so what critics dismissed as the hippie museum is now open, a $100 million shrine to the baby boom. A chance for us to tell our kids, and more, our grandkids, see kids, that's how my generation got its music, naked, high, and in the mud. Which is why we raised you never to do that. So when are you moving to a place of your own? The Osgood File, Dave Ross, on the CBS Radio Network.
Mark Hood for Judge is endorsed by the Monterey County Deputy Sheriff's Association, the Peace Officers Research Association of the Central Coast, and the union representing court employees. Mark Hood is the only candidate for judge who has 19 years experience with major criminal prosecutions, plus significant civil experience with a leading firm. Tough on violent crime, smart on prevention. On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge.
I'm Mark Hood, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Mark Hood judge.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Mommy, what's that right-wing slime on the radio? We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, talking with Rory O'Connor, author of this new book, Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio, America's 10 Worst Hate Talkers, and the Progressive Alternative.
Ready, steady, go!
And Rory, I wanted to tell you a little story about Rush Limbaugh, and I also have a tape here from the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music and radio archives that I'll dig out for you. I spent 2.5 years following Rush Limbaugh on KNBR in San Francisco every day, and Rush came out for a promo tour 1 week and was there, and he consented to spend 1 hour in the studio with me. It was fascinating. Off the air, a really nice guy. None of the bombast, none of the ego that you would expect. He told me how lucky he was. He said, I'm going to ride this thing as far as I can. And he was almost giddy and gigglish that, you know, they sent limos for him and put him up in six-star hotels and all that stuff. On the air was a different story. The on-air light was lit, and he just went for the jugular, you know, in his typical way. It was awkward for him because he's not used to being a guest on somebody else's show. And that comes into the origins of Rush Limbaugh. And I was telling you a little bit of this off the air. But in the 1970s, ABC, the radio network, failed at launching a national talk radio network. And out of that failure came a massive research project where a guy named Ed McLaughlin, who was running that division for ABC, came up with a formula that they thought would be successful in changing talk radio. And some of this, as you describe in your book, had to do with the changing landscape, the lack of enforcement of the Fairness Doctrine, and its ultimate repeal. What they came up with was a formula called non-guested confrontation talk radio. And so instead of, like, me interviewing you or somebody else, it created the mode of the host as a godlike figure.
Well, we could still be confrontational, can't we?
Yeah, we can. The confrontational part was, of course, to gin up controversy. And what better way to do that than with a very conservative or somebody who could play that role? And it took them about 18 months to find Rush Limbaugh after they identified the formula. And they went over to Sacramento and listened to him where he was working. And they laid out this plan, this formula for him. And he said, yeah, I can do that. And the truth is, he can. He's really good at it.
Well, I was going to say, you know, in fairness, we have to give credit where credit is due and say what you will. And I have a lot of things to say in the book and elsewhere about Rush Limbaugh. I have to say, he is a great entertainer. He is fabulous at what he does on the radio. And also, this Ed McLaughlin came up with a brilliant format, which 20 years later, you know, to some extent remains the gold standard in talk radio and led to a billion-dollar industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, here's a little snippet of my conversation with Rush. And imagine, I'm there in the booth, and the station manager and my boss, the program director, kicked the call screener out, and they're sitting there facing Rush and cheering him on with thumbs up as I ask him these questions, one of the most uncomfortable shows I've ever done.
Look at my show as as an entertainment forum for people, and I screen calls to find the best call. You know what the main, in my philosophy, you know what the purpose of a good call is on my show? To make me look good. I will tell you flat out, this show is not about what anybody else but me thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to discover what America thinks because it's impossible. There's no talk show host in the world who can tell you what his community or his neighborhood thinks based on what happens on his show. And so I'm not even laboring under that misconception. Calls are there to make me look good, to bring up interesting things. There's no public service aspect. There's no First Amendment aspect that I care about regarding it. And we're not looking for people who agree. In fact, we strive for people who disagree.
We'll talk more about that as we continue.
Well, kind on that last point.
But see, I mean, he's unabashed. And the thread that runs through your book is that every one of these right-wing hosts dismisses their impact and says, I'm just an entertainer.
It's just a joke. You know what they say to me when I call them on this is, Rory, lighten up. Why are you being so PC? And then ultimately, if I continue to say, hey, it's a free country, why don't you just change the channel?
Mm-hmm. Or go out and do a talk show of your own. Let's go to Dave in Eureka. Welcome, Dave. You're on the PBC show with Rory O'Connor.
Hey, Peter, you're dragging the names of some truly dreadful lowlifes across the airways today, but I've got to believe, Roy, that Ann Coulter has received an honorable mention in your work there.
Well, Ann certainly deserves mention, but the last time I checked, she did not have her own radio show.
Oh, it's true.
Dear.
Yeah.
She's off and on it enough to offend me.
Well,
she doesn't have her own show. That's right. I didn't think of it that way.
But can you think of a detestable woman who's kind of in the same vein? She's not a blonde.
I'd say Sean Hannity comes close, but he's not all that
female.
Michael Medved, he's a dreadful one.
And he's kind of female.
I was fishing for Laura Ingraham with the silent
Laura
H.
Ingraham.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Dave, we're going to send you a book because you need to bone up on the boneheads. I can tell. All right?
Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks for calling today. And here was a voicemail message I got when I was following Rush every day. I think I get a kick out of this.
Yes, Peter B. I have a sad story to relate to you. In November of 1990, I tested positive for EIB. But I found that with a good, healthy dose of realism in the Peter B. Collins show, I was able to get over it, and I think others out there can get over it, too. Okay, take care. Bye.
So he tested positive for EIB, and if people don't know the reference, the mythical company that Rush talks about is Excellence in Broadcasting. That's his mythical network. And that's what the gentleman was referring to there. Before we move on from Rush, anything else you want to add?
Well, I think what I want to add is that this entire medium, which, in its current incarnation, had its genesis with Rush Limbaugh, as you say, almost 20 years ago, was born out of a sense of victimization and of being outsiders and giving voice to people who felt like they were voiceless. Now, what we found is that they succeeded so wildly that inevitably they became the ultimate insiders. Let's not forget, for the last 8 years, the far right has controlled the White House, the Congresses, and the Supreme Court largely. So Rush Limbaugh and his ilk went from being outsiders pointing fingers to staying in the Lincoln bedroom. And I think what we're going to see, we've already seeing him repositioning himself so that whoever is elected president in November, whether it is Hillary, probably not, Barack Obama, or even John McCain, as we've seen, Rush Limbaugh and his friends are going to position themselves once again as outsiders, as victims in opposition.
You know, the feminazis forgot one thing. Well, one of the objectives of the feminazis over the last 20, 25 years has been to dominate the public education system so as to remove the competitive nature of boys. I mean, there's a crisis of young man-boy education in the schools, and they did this on purpose.
What?
To eliminate male competition in the workforce. This is part of feminazi grand plan. They forgot affirmative action for black guys. And because of that, every bit of their plan has gone up in smoke now, because they had to come out in favor of affirmative action.
Now, Rory, this brings up a point that I want to make. The right-wing hosts spend a lot of their time dispensing free advice to liberals and Democrats. And one time I heard Sean Hannity, misstating a lot of facts, but he had time to take a call from Newt Gingrich. And the two of them spent 10 minutes offering advice to Democratic candidates. And it's like, when Rush starts to talk about race relations and those issues, I'm sorry, it just doesn't wash.
Yeah, it's kind of like military intelligence is a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it? But also, another point I want to make here on that clip you just played, you know, the term feminazis, of course, was invented by Rush Limbaugh, and he and Bill O'Reilly and Michael Savage and all the others, like nothing better than to compare whomever and whatever to the Nazis and the KKK, whether it's Arianna Huffington, whether it's the feminist movement, whatever it is, they're all Nazis.
Yeah. All right, let's take another call. If I have this right, Gene is on the line from Waterloo, Iowa. You get the long distance award today, Gene.
Well, thanks, but this isn't Gene.
Oh, okay. I can tell this is Billy in Capitola. We lost Gene.
Yes.
Gene, call back if you're still listening. Go ahead, Billy.
Well, I was curious about a couple of things. Number one, is anybody doing, you know, sort of hate radio from the left? I try to, but I just, you know, it's just hard to be that hateful.
You couldn't find a regular source of venom?
Well, you know, the only people you want to pick on from the left-hand side is people who are literally the Republicans themselves, or as we call them, the repugnant ones. But no class of people, because, you know, what you do on the right is, you know, you pick on somebody who everybody likes to pick on, like women or blacks or gays. It's not so easy when you're a lefty, because really you're trying to solve problems, and that's not done best by calling names, but God knows some of us try. And the other question I have before I go is, I'm interested in this little sliver of hate radio where you hire Jews to talk about how great Christians are, like the aforementioned Medved, like down in L.A., Prager.
Mm-hmm.
What is that about?
That's interesting. All right, first question first. Rory?
Remind me of the first question. I was just thinking of Michael Savage on the Jewish issue.
Well, he's saying, you know, is there an equivalent on the left?
Yes. Well, there are what I call shock jocks on the left. I would put Randy Rhodes in that, for example, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, and Mike Malloy as well. What these actually are people who have learned, I think quite well, many of the techniques that, in a sense, were pioneered by Rush Limbaugh and others, and they're now turning around and doing precisely what you're talking about and just aiming the rifle in a different direction. So I do think there are a couple out there who certainly would qualify, yes.
But on that level, I think that people make a mistake to think that you can simply flip and use the same tactics with liberal or leftist viewpoints. And I think Billy raised the question in the right way, that the sensibilities of the listeners for progressive talk are very different. And we've run into this with programmers across the country who say, well, Peter, you do a nice show, but it's a little too smart, and I don't hear enough name-calling.
And it's too nuanced. I mean, I think there's another thing that you do see from the liberals and the progressives is that they tend to be more empathic. They tend to see what virtue there may be in the opposing argument. They're open to an opposing argument. Let's start with that, which many of these shock jocks on the right simply are not. So ultimately, yes, I think that you are right that this is very much a right-wing phenomenon and almost exclusively one.
All right. And to Billy's point about Christian-loving Jews.
Well, Christian-loving Jews, or some say, you know, they're self-hating Jews. As I say, you know, Michael Savage, and I have a piece that's been out just over the last week about Savage, and, you know, in it he said Larry King and Wolf Blitzer, both of whom are Jewish, you know, would stop at nothing at shoving Jews into the oven. So, you know, and then once again, there we are with yet another Nazi reference.
Mm-hmm. All right, Billy, you get a book.
Hey, that's great. I enjoy reading it.
Okay.
I'm interested in talk radio, as you know.
Yes, I do.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Billy, thanks a lot, and hold on. We'll get a mailing address for you. And, Rory, I want to talk next about the fairness doctrine. We've got about a minute till our break. Let's just reel off a couple of the people who haven't been mentioned. Glenn Beck, who has a syndicated radio show, and also, for inexplicable reasons, is given free rein on the cable headline news channel.
Yeah, he's on CNN, is what we need to remind ourselves of, that well-known left-wing cable news network, as the right-wing talk radio people, except for Glenn Beck, regularly refer to it. Beck is now the number four most popular right-wing talk radio host in America. So he's very much on the ascendant. He, of course, has a bestseller that's out there now. And that's another thing, is that you see the new breed. You know, Beck is one of the younger of these right-wing talk radio hosts. What you find is that they're available much more than the old breed on multiple platforms. So they're on radio, they're on television, they're writing books, they're having syndicated columns like Bill O'Reilly. They basically are multimedia outfits all into themselves.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and return with Rory O'Connor. His new book, Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio, just out today from Alternet Books. And if you're on the line, stay there. We'll give away at least one more copy before the top of the hour. Our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero & Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you. Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
For is a more rigorous license renewal process for the individual radio stations, and that we need to make them certify that a range of views were presented on that station. And I don't want to do it hour by hour, but I think at the end of a 3 or 5 year license period, the licensee has to say, look, we provided a diverse range of viewpoints, and here is the proof. And if we force them to do that, I think that we would see an end to these all-right, all-the-time stations, where they'd at least have to insert one non-conservative host.
Well, I think you're entirely right about that. But I do want to say that the controversy on talk radio that happened recently about the return of the Fairness Doctrine was essentially an invented one, a ginned-up one.
Yep.
The Fairness Doctrine is not coming back. Now, whether it should or not, that's a long discussion, whether re-regulation is the way to go. But this is another case of them essentially taking on the mantle of victims. You know, they had, let's not forget, they had just come off of a very successful campaign where essentially talk radio killed a very essential bipartisan immigration reform in this country.
That's right.
And
language,
was,
cultures, borders.
Right. Shamnesty for the illegals. Okay.
Right.
So they had a big victory, and then they turned on their heels and they said, okay, next we're going to go after the reimposition of the Fairness Doctrine because we feel that we were so successful at killing this bill that the politicians are going to now come after us and get rid of us. You know, it's called the Hush Rush Act, okay?
Yeah.
It's all aimed at getting Rush Limbaugh off the airwaves. Now, should there be more diversity on the airwaves? Absolutely. What is the best way to accomplish that? Let's have that conversation. But also, let's recognize that this so-called threat to the First Amendment is not at all real. Like most things in the right-wing talk radio sphere, it was invented in order to create outrage and drive up ratings.
Yep, you got that right. I want people to read the book, Shock Jocks, Hate Speech and Talk Radio. Rory O'Connor is our guest. And let's go to Drew, one of our contrarian listeners in Monterey. Hey, Drew, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
I hate it when you say that. I'm glad you called.
Hey, you know, obviously I'm kind of a Savage fan, and I'm a fan of your show, so go figure.
Can we get you some publicly paid psychotherapy, Drew? That's my liberal reaction. I'm a compassionate...
I think it's foolish to dismiss Savage as some shock jock, you know? I mean, if you go to Media Matters and you read some clips of stuff he said, then you're obviously going to think he's a bit of a crackpot. He is a bit of an outrageous person, but he's also highly intelligent. He's historically educated. He joined with Chuck Schumer to stop the Dubai ports deal, which I think everybody is a positive, everybody considers a positive thing. He also is one of the only people in the media to defend these polygamists out there, you know, saying that the state overreached their bounds. He's not saying that polygamy is right or wrong, but he knows that the Child Protective Services agency overreached what they're supposed to be able to do. He's the only person that did that, and he has a lot of foresight, you know. And I just think that to dismiss him as just some shock jock is foolish because, you know, like I said, you go to Media Matters, you listen, you read some of those bits and clips of, it just doesn't do him justice. I'm sorry.
Okay, Rory?
Well, thanks for your call. I appreciate your insights. I guess in response, I would say that, you know, even in a broken radio is right twice a day. So certainly I'm sure that Michael Savage has been right from time to time. But I really feel that, you know, Savage is so extreme. And, in fact, many of his fellow right-wing talk radio personalities reject him. Bill O'Reilly, for example, called him a smear merchant. And Neil Bortz has referred to him as the Antichrist. I'm sorry?
It seems like that would please you. I mean, obviously he's not just lock in step with all the right-wing conservatives. He was also the first conservative talk show to dissent on George Bush and to say, look, George Bush is running our country. And, you know, he just, what I like about it is he's not buying into one thing. You talk about the fairness doctrine. He is the embodiment of the fairness doctrine. He doesn't pledge allegiance to one side or the other.
I'm sorry. That is over the line, Drew. The rest of it, you're entitled to your opinion. And yes, you know, I don't think Michael Savage is pure evil 100% of the time. But he does cross the line. And his hateful comments about women, from Hillary Clinton to other people who've been in public life, like Barbara Boxer, and he criticizes them not for their policies, but because they have clipped hair. And I don't know what clipping your hair has to do with offending Michael Savage, but that's what he goes off on. And there are other weirdnesses, too. So we're out of time here. We'll have to agree to disagree, but we'll send you a copy of the book, Drew. Hold on here, and we'll get your address, okay? And we won't share it with Homeland Security. Rory O'Connor, thanks for joining us. Really a pleasure to see you here in person.
Peter, it's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Shock Jocks is the new book by Rory O'Connor. Pick it up. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. The podcast is available. Link on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Ling. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at the
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The final day of the primary campaign.
Hillary Clinton's last stand.
We're going to make our case to all of the delegates.
I'm Barry Bagnato in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Successful brain surgery for Senator Ted Kennedy. I'm Jim Crisula in Durham, North Carolina.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Hillary Clinton drew an enthusiastic crowd in Rapid City, South Dakota, a moment she might want to savor. Her campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination could be over after tomorrow's primaries in South Dakota and Montana.
Hi, everybody. Hi. How you doing, young man?
Showing no sign of surrender, Hillary Clinton shook hands and signed placemats with pictures of presidents at a crowded landmark restaurant here.
We're going to make our case to all of the delegates.
But many supporters at the tables believe the cause is lost.
I'm disappointed.
I have mixed emotions, you know. They're both good candidates.
Barack Obama in Michigan suggested Clinton would be part of his team.
She and I will be working together in November.
Her advisors insist it's not over till it's over. But her husband here in South Dakota hinted it is.
This may be the last day I'm ever involved in a campaign of this kind.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Rapid City, South Dakota.
I'm Dan Revive, a spokesman for the Clinton campaign and a friend of the candidate, after speaking with Senator Clinton, say absolutely she will not quit the campaign tomorrow night. Frankly, no one's ruling out Wednesday, depending in part on the results of tomorrow's final primaries, but even more on which way superdelegates are turning. So far, mostly to Obama.
House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn is endorsing Obama and says he's asking his fellow South Carolina superdelegates to do the same. When the dust settles, Obama says he hopes to meet with Hillary Clinton. Now this.
Hi, I'm the owner of several Italian restaurants, and all my employees are so happy because I now make Aflac available to them. With Aflac, my benefits package is like a full course meal, and there is no direct cost to me. That is like music to my ears.
Call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Fixed-rate mortgage or adjustable-rate mortgage? Should you flip a coin, or is there a better way to decide?
Here's a smart borrower tip, courtesy of the Smart Borrower Center at LendingTree.com.
If you plan on staying in your home at least 5 years, the security of a fixed rate usually makes sense. But if you're not staying that long and adjustable rates are at least 1 point lower than fixed, it can save you a bundle.
For more information and objective advice on lending, visit the Smart Borrower Center at LendingTree.com/smartborrower today or call 1-800-555-TREE for information and licensing.
Senator Ted Kennedy had an operation today. CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula reports.
The surgery to treat Senator Ted Kennedy's cancerous brain tumor lasted about 3.5 hours. Doctors here at Duke University Medical Center are calling it a success and say that it accomplished their goals. Doctors say Kennedy was awake during the surgery and that he should not experience any permanent neurological effects. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Durham, North Carolina.
The senator now faces follow-up treatment back home in Massachusetts, and there's a new treatment on the horizon. Duke researcher Gary Archer says they've had success with brain tumor vaccine.
In conjunction with known therapies such as radiation and chemotherapy, that we can also train the body's immune system to help fight this cancer.
In a study, the vaccine more than doubled patients' survival times. In Texas, a tearful mother reunited with her child.
Oh, I'm going to hug you and kiss you.
Under a judge's order, CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick reports the children removed from the polygamist compound are being sent back.
The court's decision took effect immediately.
The court order reads that every single child will be returned to their parents' care.
But there were strings attached, required parenting classes and unannounced visits by state workers, because the investigation into abuse goes on. Marley Meisner of Child Protective Services.
I still feel very strongly about our case, and I feel very strongly about the safety and concerns that we have regarding these children.
Julie Balovich is an attorney for some of the parents.
They have allegations. Specific allegations of abuse and neglect by our clients, they're entitled to investigate them.
Cammie McCormick, CBS News, San Angelo.
An elder of the polygamous sect says they have a new policy. Girls cannot marry until they reach the legal age of consent in the state where they live. The International Space Station and Shuttle Discovery formed an orbital convoy today.
This big Ben, this here's a rubber duck, and I'm about to put the hammer down.
A little background music as Discovery and its crew of seven linked up to deliver a Japanese space lab and a vital replacement for the space station's toilet. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
They say a man should always dress for the job he wants. So why am I dressed up like a pirate in this restaurant? It's all because some hacker stole my identity. Now I'm in here every evening serving chowder and iced tea. Should have gone to freecreditreport.com. I could have seen this coming at me like an atom bomb. They monitor your credit and send you email alerts so you don't end up selling fish to tourists in t-shirts.
Offer applies with enrollment and triple advantage.
Ha! Look at that!
What?
The Nuvi! This is precisely why I subscribed to MSN Direct when I bought this Garmin Nuvi 780.
What is it?
A traffic backup right there on our route.
What do we do?
We avoid it.
How?
The Nuvi simply directs us to the best alternate route, huh?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
To receive MSN Direct traffic content, you must be within its coverage area. For details, navigate to Garmin.com.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
See you, Rory. There he goes. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You ever get that feeling you're being monitored? That's what we're going to talk about this half hour. And later in the hour, Jeffrey Feldman returns from FrameShopIsOpen.com, the author of a new book called Outright Barbarous, How the Violent Use of Language from the Right Poisons American Democracy. If you'd like to call the program, you're welcome to participate. Our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And joining me now is Nicole Mauro. She is the co-editor of a publication, a book called Intersection, which came out, well, she's going to tell me exactly when, but I got a copy a couple of months ago. And it is a fascinating look at streets and street life, and a lot of issues related to that. Nicole, welcome to our program.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, you too.
Tell us about the origins of this volume and the work of Jane Jacobs.
Well, to begin with the origins of the volume, my friend Marcy Nelligan, who also co-edited the book, and I were interested in putting something together that would explore something that we use all the time and take for granted that had kind of a political angle to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came up with the idea of sidewalks, a thing that for a lot of us is both practical and pedestrian. And for some people, it's a place that isn't so pedestrian. They perform art on sidewalks. It's a place for people to challenge the status quo. And for others, it's a place of potential, which isn't to say legitimate threat, and so is a place that, as Melissa Nago will talk about, requires scrutiny and monitoring, according to them, and that leads to issues of surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty much where the impulse came from as far as why we wanted to do this. And Jane Jacobs enters into this in that she became kind of the center or the conscience of the book because she was really interested in the way sidewalks are used, how they're regulated, not so much by politicians, although that comes into play in her book, The Death and Life of American Cities, but more how they're actually used and how people end up monitoring them organically. And
mm-hmm.
so that's why she's at the center of the book.
And you have some photo displays in the book that were taken, at least this one section, in the Mission District of San Francisco.
Yes.
And it kind of follows the developments of sidewalk art
mm-hmm.
and the kind of expressions that people place there. And some of it's kind of on the dark side. Some of it's kind of in the conspiracy theory zone. Other things are kind of personal moments or expressions. What do you find in terms of the way people relate to sidewalks beyond a place to park your gum or just to move your feet?
You know, I think a lot of people think of them as templates for the way we live our life and also templates for how we organize ourselves kind of within a greater body or community. And the photographs, the collages that you're referring to were collated by Paul Madonna. And I find his work to be incredibly subversive, but in a sort of a galvanizing and positive kind of way. So one thing that he really did that I think is just so amazing and interesting is he actually looked down at the sidewalk. He was looking at what people were doing on the sidewalk, because for the most part when we walk around on the sidewalk, we're looking, you know, more or less straight ahead. We're
right.
not really looking up, we're not looking down. And he really looked down and put together an interesting collection of I guess you'd call it maybe human memorabilia from that.
Yeah. Interesting that you mentioned that. A few years ago, my nephews were going to Paris for the first time, and I said, be sure that you look up and be sure that you look down. Because I think that often, particularly kids, are just kind of wandering around and whatever's at eye level gets absorbed. But sometimes they don't take the trouble to look in the distance, to kind of look up at the skyline and spires and that sort of thing. It looks like we lost Melissa. So, Katrina, if you could dial her back, I'll clear that for you. At any rate, I do think it's important when you're a tourist to soak it all up. And there is a lot of information and expression on the sidewalks. Nicole, do I still have you? Let's see.
If you'd like to make.
Okay. So I hung up on both of them. Katrina? Is isn't that special? We'll get our guests back on the line here in just a moment. The volume I'm talking about is called Intersection, and it is co-edited by Marcy Nelligan and Nicole Morrow. And we'll find out from Nicole when we get her back on the line where you can get a copy of it for yourself. And now we're joined by Melissa Ngo, who is the Privacy and Information Policy Consultant and publisher of PrivacyLives.com, monitoring the pulse of privacy. Melissa, welcome to our program today.
Thank you for having me.
It's nice to talk with you. Give us a little bit of a background on you and your issues about public spaces and surveillance.
Sure. Well, I've worked in privacy and civil liberties for several years, and as I continue to work in this area, I see more and more growing sort of surveillance society where people are becoming more and more okay with the fact that there are surveillance cameras watching you, that whenever you go anywhere, you have to show identification, that when you try to get on a plane, you have to take off your shoes. It becomes commonplace for there to be this heightened sort of surveillance of people who've done nothing wrong. So in that way, that's why I've started focusing more on camera surveillance systems.
And do we have an expectation, a right to privacy when we're in public?
I think that people do. And when you think about it, you have to remember what people think about in terms of privacy. If you're walking down the street, you expect to be anonymous. Unless you decide to do something out of the ordinary, you don't expect people to know who you are, to be able to identify you, and to be able to trace you to that exact moment in that exact place. I mean, there are a lot of things that people do that are perfectly legal that they want to keep private, yet they do it in a public space because they have to. For example, if I want to enter a fertility clinic, I will walk along a public street to get into the fertility clinic, but I certainly don't want that recorded, broadcast, replayed for anyone to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are many other cases, too, where you just have this expectation that if you went to visit a doctor, if you came out of an office where there are only psychiatrists, that unless you have done something to draw attention to yourself or violated the law, that you have a basic expectation that you're not going to be monitored or reported on by others.
Yes. I mean, it's getting to the point to where in order to prove that you're innocent, you have to accept that you'll be treated as if you are a criminal. You're a suspect who needs to be watched every second.
Now, you point out in your article in this book called Intersection that in London, they now have 200,000 cameras scattered throughout the city. That is amazing. Big Brother is everywhere.
Yes, the British system has just gotten bigger and bigger and more bloated, yet it's interesting to see that not one study done on those London cameras, done on the cameras throughout Britain, is able to prove a decline in crime, an actual effect on crime because of the cameras.
And Melissa, don't they often distract us with anecdotal information, such as the 7705 attacks in London? My nephew, by the way, was on a tube, one of the underground trains, just two stops from the station where some of the activity took place, so I have more than passing interest there. And we saw in the aftermath of that, in the investigation, that they had photographs of the alleged terrorists as they entered the tube stations, and it did appear to be effective in identifying some of those individuals.
Yes. In post-crime investigation, it has been shown that cameras can be useful. But you have to remember that this is after the fact. When camera surveillance systems are first created, the police, the government officials, they all say, oh, these cameras will make you safer. They will cut down on crime. And that's just not true. What the cameras are good at is after the crime, you go back and you try to identify people. Sometimes they work. In the case of the July 7, 2005 bombers, they were able to be identified. But there are other cases where people have hats boots or sunglasses, and they can't be identified.
Mm-hmm.
So what you wish at that point was that you'd taken the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent on camera surveillance systems and had more police walking the streets able to do something and to stop something in progress.
We're talking with Melissa Nago. She is a privacy and information policy consultant. Her website is Privacy Lives or Lives. How do you say that?
Privacy Lives.
PrivacyLives.com. And she formerly was senior counsel and director of the Identification and Surveillance Project at the Electronic Privacy Information Center, and that's based in Washington. And Melissa, just briefly before we go to a break here, how widespread is camera surveillance in the United States, and how fast is it growing?
Well, in the last few years, since September 11th, there has been a lot more money set aside for these types of programs. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security, the federal Department of Homeland Security, has given out about $300 million in grants.
Wow.
In these few years for camera surveillance systems. And when I say, I mean, that's what I'm talking about, $300 million for cameras instead of cops.
Yeah.
And they're everywhere. They're in big cities like D.C., Chicago, San Francisco, but they're also in tiny towns like Dillingham, Alaska. That town has a population of 2,400 people, and it has 80 surveillance cameras.
Amazing. We're going to take a break here in a moment. We're talking with Melissa Nago. She has this article or a chapter in a book called Intersection, which is co-edited by Nicole Morrow. And, Nicole, I'm sorry I hung up on you there a few minutes ago. You're back with us now. And tell us how people can get their very own copy of Intersection.
There are a number of ways you can get your very own copy of Intersection. I would say the best ways would be to go through Small Press Distribution, which is www.spdbooks.org. That would be one way, and it's also available through Amazon.
Okay, great. And it's called Intersection. We're going to take a break and return. Got a caller on the line if you'd like to join us. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Our schools are in trouble. Healthcare is a mess. The economy is broken. I get it. But we can get California back on track. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm running for state assembly because we can't send more politicians to Sacramento. I'm a leader in a group fighting foreign corporate control of our water, and we're winning. I was twice elected to our local school board, balancing budgets in tough times and seeing the kids didn't fall through the cracks. I started a green technology business, creating jobs with full health care benefits. And I was trained in making good public policy by Leon Panetta at the Panetta Institute. We can do a better job in California. We can grow our economy by investing in college education and green technology. But we need leaders who get it and who can get the job done. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm ready to get the job done for all of us. I would be honored to have your vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd. This message was paid for by my campaign, Spranger 2008.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
9 p.m. Saturday, not heard in 4 years, Monterey Soaps, the Bob Oliver Show, The Quantum Leap. Monterey Soaps, Saturday, 9 p.m., what your local politicians don't want you to know.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Good afternoon. I'm happy to say very quiet as we start things off. Monterey, Santa Cruz, and Salinas all currently checking in, stalling accident-free. Through Santa Cruz, we have some delays possible due to the AIDS Life Cycle bike ride that's going on today between Santa Cruz and King City. It looks like riders will use Highways 1 and 101 in addition to some city and country roads, so that's going to cause delays. Just be prepared for that if you're in the area. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains currently checking in, stalling accident-free. And 101 southbound as you leave South San Jose headed towards Morgan Hill. Just patches of slow traffic, not looking too bad at this point. And this is brought to you by Sprint. Communicate in less than a second and get more done with Nextel Direct Connect, only on the Now Network. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel for details. If you spot a traffic problem, let us know. 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Stag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Parts.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and with all due respect to Gil Scott-Heron, the revolution will be televised on closed circuit surveillance cams, which there was a fabulous... it's just coming back to me now. George Coates did a performance in San Francisco about 10 years ago based on the concept that there would be a reality television channel where you could watch surveillance cameras anywhere in the country. And if you wanted to look at a 7-Eleven in Seattle or one in Louisville or a supermarket in Florida, you could choose that and just sit there and watch the action. And then it would give you a bulletin if there was a crime or something else occurring that was covered by that surveillance camera. We're talking with Melissa Ngo, formerly with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. Now you can find her at privacylives.com. And her editor, Nicole Morrow, is with us. She writes, teaches rhetoric and writing at the University of San Francisco, is co-editor of this book, Intersection, and she has our sympathy because she is the lucky woman married to the guy our listeners know as Tommy Panic. Sorry to out you on that one, Nicole. Now, did either of you see or were you aware of that George Coates performance? Like I said, it was about 10 or 11 years ago.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Melissa?
I do not know about it, but it does sound like something that is easy to come up with. I mean, there are so many cameras. What would stop people from setting up some sort of entertainment from it?
Right, yeah. Now, what about Google Earth, Melissa? Do you have concerns about that?
Yes, and actually what Google Earth and Google Street View is, for people listening who don't know, is what happened is Google operatives went around to various cities and took pictures of various streets. When you put into Google Earth an address, it'll pop up these pictures so you can see what the streets look like. But what happened was Google didn't get anyone's permission for this.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up with photos of sunbathers, a guy picking his nose. They had an image that was so clear of a woman's home that you could see her cat in her window inside her home.
Oh, boy.
and numerous other images to where people started screaming, "This is a violation. I cannot believe that you took this photo without my consent, put it up. And why are you doing this? What have I done?"
Yeah, and not everybody's like Dick Cheney and can get Google Earth to remove you or Google Streets to remove you from the site. Let's go to Greta in Monterey, who's got a comment. Welcome, Greta. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you. I have had an experience with the surveillance cameras at a local convenience store gas station that I can visit very often. In fact, almost predictably, every two or three days. And I was, at the time, a year ago, I was having thefts by someone who appears to have access to any lock they please. At a particular point, within 5 weeks, I had 6 pair of readers, you know, glasses that you get by at the drugstore.
Cheaters, yeah.
And a particular evening, the night of the incident I'm going to describe, I went into the gas station, the last thing of the day.
Greta, I'm sorry, I only have about 30 seconds, so please speed it up.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Essentially, someone stole from me. I went back to the, while I was there, I went back knowing that that's where they stole my glasses. The manager looked at the tapes, and we saw that the person doing it was signaling someone on the camera that they were stealing my glasses.
Wow. Okay, that's well wired. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Very interesting. Melissa Ngo, thank you for joining us. And Nicole Marrow, thanks for editing or co-editing Intersection. And Nicole, tell us again where people can find it online, please.
At spdbooks.org.
spdbooks.org.
And Amazon.
All right, very good. Thank you both. Good to talk with you. And watch out. You're on Candid Camera right now.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Can there be unity in diversity? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Over the weekend, in the name of party unity, the Democrats decided to seat the delegations from Michigan and Florida, but to punish them for voting early, they cut each delegate's vote in half. That pretty much sealed the contest for Barack Obama, leaving Hillary Clinton's rep, Harold Ickes, defiant.
Mrs. Clinton has instructed me to reserve her rights to take this to the Credentials Committee.
And the crowd helpfully reminded everyone where that Credentials Committee will be meeting. But DNC Chair Howard Dean declared mission accomplished.
Years ago, a Democratic rules discussion was an invitation for a food fight in a crowded room like this. I think we've moved beyond that.
But outside the crowded room, Hillary Clinton, on the strength of her landslide in Puerto Rico, began running this ad.
17 million Americans have voted for Hillary Clinton, more than for any primary candidate in history.
And a woman named Harriet Christian began running her mouth.
The Democrats are throwing the election away. For what?
That's the snippet the news agencies fed. For the rest of the cut, you had to do what about 800,000 other people did and go to YouTube.
For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman.
But others were a little more optimistic.
We can now begin the healing process. Is it going to be easy? I don't think so.
Well, at least they all agree on that. Now this.
In spring, love is in the air. And so are a lot of other things, like pollen, dust, and that old romance killer, ragweed. So if you want to be able to see the love light in her eyes, or his eyes, make sure you get Clear Eyes Itchy Eye Relief. It clears up itchy, red, and watery eyes, so that nothing comes between you and amore.
Mm.
Want Clear Eyes? Get Clear Eyes brand Itchy Eye Relief. Use as directed.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
For me, it started in the fields. It started seeing people sick and dying from pesticide poisoning. I'm Bill Monning. I'm a candidate for assembly today because working together, I know we can make a difference. I brought growers, workers, and neighbors together to take on the chemical companies. That fight took me to Sacramento, where I helped pass bills that have protected workers, rural residents, and our environment. I'm Bill Monning. Working with people to improve our lives and build our community is what is most important to me. For the past 35 years, I've raised a family here, taught at the Monterey Institute and the Monterey College of Law, and worked to build mediation alternatives to legal disputes. My latest project is bringing conflict resolution into our schools to keep kids from resorting to violence. Now I want to take those mediation skills to get things done in Sacramento. Join our campaign. To volunteer for Monning for Assembly, call 655-1792 or check our website, billmonning.org. Paid for by Bill Monning for Assembly.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge. Mark Hood has devoted his life to protecting communities from crime. With 19 years as a criminal prosecutor and significant civil experience, Mark Hood has handled thousands of cases, including murder, crime by gang members, kidnapping, and fraud. Praised by judges, fellow prosecutors, and defense attorneys alike, and endorsed by law enforcement. On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge.
I'm Mark Hood, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Mark Hood judge.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 33 minutes into the hour. Words matter. The words you choose go beyond just simple communication. Depending on the framing, the context, and the language that you use, people can get widely divergent messages from the same expression. And Jeffrey Feldman knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. He operates the website, FrameShopIsOpen.com, and he has a new book out, which is called Outright Barbarous. We'll explain the origins of that title in a moment. Subtitle, How the Violent Language of the Right Poisons American Democracy. Hello, Jeffrey. Welcome back.
Hi, Peter.
Been too long. Haven't talked to you in ages.
It has been a while.
And you got the new book out. Tell us the status of that, because I have an advance uncorrected proof, and I don't know if it's actually available to our listeners now.
Well, it is available. It was out on May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Fully corrected copies. You can get it on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or any local bookstore in your area.
Great. Well, I want to dive into some interesting things in the book in a moment. But before we go there, I wanted to get your thoughts, because we haven't spoken in a while, about some of the language that has been exchanged by the Democratic candidates for president. And on the heels of the primaries ending, the Rules Committee's decision on Saturday related to Michigan and Florida, we're getting word that the Clinton campaign is planning a concession party for Tuesday night. They've recalled the advance men. They've told all staffers to submit their receipts. And so the signals are that they're getting ready to shut the machinery down. But in the last 6 to 8 weeks, I've been troubled by some of the exchanges, and in particular, some of the language used by the Clinton campaign. And, Jeffrey, you may not be aware of it, but I have embraced Barack Obama, and that was months ago, so I don't make any claim to being completely unbiased or any of that stuff. But when the first tape came out through the Huffington Post, where Barack Obama was caught on tape making these remarks in San Francisco about people in Pennsylvania, he was described as elite, by the Clinton apparatus, and he was criticized for referring to some voters in Indiana as bitter because of chronic economic problems, and it leads them to embrace God and guns and things of that sort. Tell me your thoughts about the way that played out, and who got the upper hand in that exchange, particularly around the term elite?
I was actually quite troubled by the way that played out, because the accusation that a politician is elite in American politics and in contemporary American politics is not a neutral criticism. In our current world, when someone is criticized as being elite, that is a way that Republicans talk about Democrats. And it is a strategy that has been running for some time. There's actually a fantastic description of it in a new book by Rick Perlstein called Nixon Land.
Yeah.
In which, you know, the whole idea is that in order for Republicans to gain the upper hand in what was perceived as a democratically controlled power structure, what the Republicans did is they rebranded the Democrats. And then one of the ideas was that Democrats were not of the people. They were not like you and me, but they were this elite class who operated behind closed doors. They did things that were not in the interest of everybody else. And that you had to look out for them because they were a danger to, you know, everybody on the street, everybody like you and me. And this is something that's been drummed into the head of the American public through the media, increasingly so with kind of privatization of media and Republican partisan media for decades now, and particularly in today's day and age when you switch over to Fox News, you hear that term thrown out constantly as a way to bring down the Democratic candidates and a way to make people afraid of Democrats. And so what the Clinton team did when they used that term is they stepped right into that conservative frame in a way that I thought was very, very troubling. Now, I think that ultimately they got the upper hand in that particular exchange, the Clinton team did, because they embraced what was effectively a Republican strategy for weakening Democratic candidates. And you'll notice it wasn't just that they used the term elite in order to describe Barack Obama, but at the same time they were showing up increasingly on what were considered to be Republican media outlets, increasingly on Fox television, on Fox radio, these places where you don't have a balanced report of what's going on in the election, but you essentially have a propaganda wing of the Republican Party whose whole purpose it is to make people afraid of Democratic candidates. And so I was really disturbed by both aspects of that. And I thought that the Obama campaign, for its part, in what they had done was essentially bring analytical language front stage by accident there. And it was a troubling thing to hear because, for the most part, the public does not is not looking for a sociology lesson.
Or political science. Yeah, and there was a breach, too, on the Clinton side where she started reciting stats about white working-class voters. And I did not think that was a racist comment, but out of context, it certainly jarred some people. I think she was talking inside baseball terminology, and that stuff really shouldn't cross the line into the media.
That was the problem, and that I think for our kind of the low IQ of the general kind of broadcast media, that was too much for them to actually pick up. Once they had that elite talking point, they went for it. But you know what we saw there, you know, there really are. There's a side of Barack Obama who really, you know, I've heard he's an excellent university lecturer, and there's a side of him who wants to stand up and give the sociological context. But in fact, what draws people to his candidacy is not that, but it's the vision for the future and how to move forward. And I think that was the mistake that was made there. But once that elite frame was set, you know, it came into play, and this huge kind of broadcast network that the conservatives have in place, and the Clinton team, they really fanned those flames expertly. But it was troubling, and it was troubling to a lot of people on the left who have been fighting against that accusation for so many years, me included. You know, a lot of people who try to explain politics in a way that makes sense, who try to bring some common sense to things, you get labeled elite, and it's very hard to recover from that. So, you know, in the short run, I think that the Clinton team, they won that argument. But in the long run, I think that sowed a lot of resentment there. A lot of people saw how willing the Clinton team was to embrace the conservative noise machine in order to make gains. And that was really, really troubling.
Now, the last time pandering was called out, I remember Paul Tsongas was running for president with that Boston accent. It became Panda Bear. He was talking about his opponent at that time. And during the, started in Pennsylvania, then West Virginia and Indiana, in that window of the primary, Hillary Clinton was promoting John McCain's idea of a summer gas tax holiday. And it was interesting to me that Obama took that risk, as well as going to Miami to talk about easing the freeze on Cuba, that he has challenged some of these kinds of third rail ideas that have been so effective for so long. And you'll recall that after the Clintons got beaten up over health care, they retreated to bite-sized triangulation bits. And this idea of borrowing a Republican idea for a gas tax holiday doesn't offend the Clintons at all. And so I found it interesting that Obama was able to rebuff that. And while we can't put precise numbers on it because the Jeremiah Wright thing was swirling at that time, it appeared to actually strengthen his position, particularly in Indiana.
It did strengthen his position because the issue with that Clinton counter proposal on the gas tax, and just to kind of be fair to her, her counter proposal was that the gas company should pay for the gas tax, not that there should be no tax, which is what McCain was proposing. It was small thinking in the worst possible way, and I think that what Obama was able to do in that moment was stand up and push people to the notion that we should be thinking much larger than this kind of bread down to the voters and as they're moving up to the election. And I think that in that moment he was able to remind people that he was running a campaign that was about a much larger form of change rather than this very small type of politics. So I think in the end he did win out big in that particular moment. I think also people saw what the Clinton team did, which was take a proposal to the floor of the Senate and try to get people to line up and support that or to show that they weren't going to support that. And what people saw in that particular political tactic was something that they'd grown tired of for a long time. They saw her kind of take this language, steal language from the Republicans, and then use another Republican tactic, which was to try to get Democrats to vote for some type of disingenuous bill with the sole purpose of accumulating political gain rather than putting forward something that was actually helpful to the American people. So in the end, Barack Obama looked like a statesman in that exchange. He looked like a visionary, and even though he didn't actually put forward a really productive environmental policy, what he ultimately did instead was simply lead the debate back to where the country wants it to be, which is at this much, much bigger place.
Jeffrey, we'll look back at this campaign as the one where candidates were required to throw their pastors under a bus. And I find it remarkable that we had another pastor eruption just last week, fanned by the right wing. I got emails from Newsmax and WorldNet Daily touting this video of a white Roman Catholic priest who was a guest speaker at Trinity in Chicago. As a result, the Obamas have resigned from that church. And it seems like, the media is able to tag Obama with responsibility for things that have happened in a presumed zone of influence, even when he's not there. And I find it incredible. We saw that it was a one-day story when McCain had to disavow Hagee and Parsley. And while we've seen reports about Hillary Clinton's participation in a prayer group called The Family in Washington with right-wingers like Rick Santorum and Sam Brownback, none of that was played into the campaign in a major way. McCain gets away essentially with a one-day story, and Obama is consistently pilloried on these pastor problems.
Yeah, I think that ultimately, if you look at what that word pastor is meaning when it is applied to Obama, particularly as it applied to Reverend Wright, it is acting as a euphemism for a much larger conversation that's going on in the United States. I mean, ultimately, when people are looking at those performances, those isolated performances by Pastor Wright, what they saw there was a certain type of African American voice that reminded, I think, a lot of people of what they thought happened in the 1960s and 1970s. And it was a way that what the right did there, they were fanning flames of fear of a kind of African-American anger in this country, fear of revenge. And ultimately, what we looked, what happened, what was crafted as a conversation about a church and about religion was very much about racial division. And so when you see a very similar thing on the other side, when you look at John McCain in relation to John Hagee, for example, you know, Pastor Hagee, who has this expounded in the most disturbing ways, these theories about the Holocaust, and very kind of violent imagery, violent language, there isn't the same conversation that's going on in the country of that particular character, so that it creates a blip in the media, then it goes away. But the right has been now for over a year, they've been fanning this notion that Barack Obama is really not being true to the American public, that when he gets into office, what's going to happen is that he's going to become this covert Muslim terrorist by virtue of his name, and he's going to become this covert black power militant who's going to seek revenge. And that's really what's being talked about in those moments. I think this second pastor got kind of drawn into it, but that was just a way of reminding people of this other incident, of this pastor, the way the pastor Wright was kind of packaged and presented as the embodiment of that language which came before, which a lot of people have forgotten.
And I find all this very confusing as an unchurched guy, Jeffrey. I look at this. I don't want religion in politics. I don't want it in government. And yet there are many people who do and who have criticized the Democrats for being insufficiently connected to spiritual people. And so when they are, it becomes a target of a different dimension.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return. Before we do, I just want to read this quotation from George Orwell that explains the title of Jeffrey's new book, Outright Barbarous. Never use a metaphor, simile, or other figure of speech which you are used to seeing in print. Never use a long word where a short will do. If it is possible to cut a word out, always cut it out. Never use the passive when you can use the active. Never use a foreign phrase, a scientific word, or a jargon word if you can think of an everyday English equivalent. Break any of these rules sooner than say anything outright barbarous. The book is Outright Barbarous. More with Jeffrey Feldman. Let me put it down here for a second so I can click the mouse. Coming right up here. And if you have a question or comment, give us a call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. The Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Good afternoon. I'm happy to say very quiet as we start things off. Monterey, Santa Cruz, and Salinas all currently checking in, stalling accident-free. Through Santa Cruz, we have some delays possible due to the AIDS Life Cycle bike ride that's going on today between Santa Cruz and King City. It looks like riders will use Highways 1 and 101 in addition to some city and country roads, so that's going to cause delays. Just be prepared for that if you're in the area. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains currently checking in, stalling accident-free. And 101 southbound as you leave South San Jose headed towards Morgan Hill. Just patches of slow traffic, not looking too bad at this point. And this is brought to you by Sprint. Communicate in less than a second and get more done with Nextel Direct Connect, only on the Now Network. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel for details. If you spot a traffic problem, let us know. 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the Sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
The Peter B. Collins Show hitting the road later this week. I'll be traveling Thursday to Minneapolis, and Peter Laufer will be sitting in for me. Then Friday and Saturday will originate live from the National Conference on Media Reform. Got a lot of great guests lined up to talk with about that subject. And next week I'm going to sneak in a few days off. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com will be sitting in for me, and we're going to do a special live broadcast from my hometown of Cincinnati behind the Reds curtain. Paul Hackett, who ran for Congress and the Senate there unsuccessfully, an Iraq veteran, will be among my guests from Cincinnati. That's on Wednesday, June 11th. So that's a quick preview of our action here at the PBC show. We continue with Jeffrey Feldman. You got to pick up his new book, Outright Barbarous, How the Violent Language of the Right Poisons American Democracy. A lot of good info in here. And Jeffrey, let me start off with Chapter 3, because on our program earlier today, Rory O'Connor was here talking about his new book about shock jocks and hate speech on talk radio. And he gives credit to right-wing shock talkers for killing the bipartisan immigration reform of the past couple of years. And you open this chapter by citing Pat Buchanan. And I was a little floored because he was the lead guest on Tom Hartman's program this morning. Frankly, he is overexposed on MSNBC. They put him on almost every show they do about politics every day. And frankly, I'm not that interested in his point of view. But he has been a driver, along with politicians like Tom Tancredo and more extreme radio hosts like Michael Savage, in making immigration a very hot-button issue. And they do so by obviously promoting hate and nationalism and racism. And they get away with it on a daily basis.
Yeah, Pat Buchanan is one of the most problematic people in our political media right now, and I don't think people quite realize it. But I mean, what I do in that chapter is a good example of what I do in the entire book. I connect up Pat Buchanan's writings, and he's got several best-selling books. His latest one, which has just come out on Hitler, I'm sure most listeners can't wait to read another book about Hitler.
Yeah.
And then I connect that up to the statements that they make in broadcast media, in order to show that these people who use violent language, these right-wing pundits who frame every political issue in violent terms, they're not just doing it incidentally, but they're doing it in such a way that completely undercuts our ability to have a productive political debate, and they are doing it in a way that reaches millions and millions of people on a daily, if not hourly, basis. But Buchanan's views on immigration go much, much deeper than just what people think about when they use the word racist or racism, a lot of words that are applied to people like Lou Dobbs. In Buchanan's book, State of Emergency, he actually makes the claim that Latino immigrants are trying to reconquer the United States. It is a remarkable claim that he makes in this book, and he backs it up with long-since-defunct anthropological theories. And his main argument in the book is that the problem with immigration is not that Americans are going to lose their jobs, per se, or not that we're going to have to speak Spanish, per se, you know, these kind of common hobby horses of the right. Buchanan says that white civilization will perish through a genocide of reproduction. It is this argument that he makes over and over again in his columns. He makes it in two successive books, State of Emergency and also Death of the West. And it is a startling argument. And I think if more people just knew that Pat Champ Buchanan was essentially a genocide alarmist, then they would be startled that he was on MSNBC so much.
And Fox News buys into this by presenting segments, and Media Matters has drawn our attention to it, where they talk about the birth rate of Latinos in the United States and then encourage Caucasians to reproduce more prolifically. And, you know, this is not even thinly veiled. It's pretty bare-knuckled.
It is bare-knuckled, and it's based on the most ridiculous scholarship. I mean, the thing about Buchanan that makes him so problematic is that he is able to present these arguments in a way that sound like they're grounded in historical fact, the way, like they're grounded in anthropological theories. And he has such an unfettered access to broadcast media that the mere fact that he says these ideas over and over again give them a sense of legitimacy. But in fact, they don't make any sense. Buchanan has been saying that the white race will be bred out of existence. American culture will no longer exist. He's been saying this for decades now. And it just simply has not proven true. I mean, he cites British politicians who in the 1960s were sounding this exact same alarm, and of course that hasn't come to pass in Europe. And yet nobody stands up and questions Buchanan on this, and nobody says what happens to our national debate when our immigration policy is trapped inside this violent idea that we are being conquered by people who are seeking revenge. Instead, they just give it more and more airtime, and that's basically what happens in every aspect of the debate, whether it's immigration or it's gun ownership, or it's a question about multiculturalism or our national policy on foreign national security. All these issues are hamstrung in this way by pundits who have best-selling books and who are on TV constantly, such that we're never able to get started on a productive, pragmatic debate on how to move forward on these issues.
Now, Jeffrey, we just have about a minute and a half remaining, so let's jump over to Ann Coulter, because it's so fun to make fun of her. But describe what you talk about in your book, her signature move, the rhetorical equivalent of a hook shot from mid-court. That's a basketball analogy.
Yeah, I mean, what Coulter does is she's always kind of she has this way of just being incredibly shocking in order to yank the conversation over to a place that no one is willing to bet it's going to go to. I mean, the other thing that she often does is she associates liberals. So first she establishes this brand, this kind of empty, hollow brand, and then she associates liberals with the worst kind of violent crimes, murder, and so forth, such that people are completely caught off guard. And she does this whenever she's cornered. You know, Ann Coulter is essentially a political entertainer who's not interested in having any kind of productive discussion, and yet she's constantly put in the chair as if she is going to have that productive discussion. And as a result, nothing ever moves forward, despite the fact that she is presented as an expert on a wide range of policy issues.
And her compassionate comment after 9/11, we should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity. We weren't punctilious about locating and punishing only Hitler and his top officers. We carpet-bombed German cities. We killed civilians. That's war, and this is war. Jeffrey, thank you very much. The new book, Outright Barbarous, it's a must-read to learn about language and framing and how it's used against us. Jeffrey, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, great. Thanks, Peter.
Website frameshopisopen.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
Hillary Clinton gives no indication she'll give up after tomorrow's primaries in Montana and South Dakota. Clinton says she'll keep urging superdelegates to go her way. But CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds reports Barack Obama is widening his lead.
We're being told that a number of U.S. senators who have stayed on the fence throughout the primaries will commit to Obama, if not on Wednesday, then perhaps Thursday or Friday, along with maybe a dozen House members.
House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn says he'll endorse Obama tomorrow. Obama says he called to congratulate Clinton after her win in yesterday's Puerto Rico primary.
I told her that once the dust settled, I was looking forward to meeting with her at a time and place of her choosing.
CBS News senior political correspondent Jeff Greenfield says it's in Obama's interest to heal the wounds of the primary campaign.
Whether the hardcore supporters of Clinton will continue to believe that this was an unfair decision, that the press was unfair to her, that there was gender bias, we're going to have to wait till the feelings of an intense primary season cool. And there are, after all, 3 months till the Democratic convention.
After 3.5 hours of brain surgery, Senator Ted Kennedy is quoted as telling his wife, "I feel like $1 million. I think I'll do that again tomorrow." CBS News correspondent Jeff Glore reports doctors at Duke University Medical Center operated to remove as much of the malignant tumor as possible.
There's always a concern when you operate on the brain that you could potentially cause some sort of brain damage and affect someone's ability to function. However, in the statement, Duke University today was very clear, and they said that Kennedy was awake during this entire procedure, and they don't think there'll be any sort of lasting neurological impact.
When he recovers from the operation, the senator goes home to Massachusetts for radiation and chemotherapy. Children removed from the Yearning for Zion polygamist compound in Texas are being reunited with their parents under a court order signed today. The families will be under close supervision, and the state's investigation into claims about physical and sexual abuse will continue. Late today, sect elder Willie Jessup announced a policy change.
In the future, the church commits that it will not preside over any marriage of any woman under the age of legal consent in the jurisdiction in which the marriage takes place.
It's alleged that underage girls have been forced into marriages with older men. Bo Diddley has died at 79.
He's truly one of the architects of the sound of what we call and have called for 50 years rock and roll.
Music journalist Mike McCann. Diddley never made a fortune but had this claim to fame.
I was the dude that was first number one.
The Dow down 134 points, closing at 12,503. This is CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
So, where do you get the gift that keeps on giving? Advance Auto Parts. Here's how it works. You buy a gift card at Advance and load it up from $5 to $500. You give it, they get it. And then it keeps on giving their car fresh oil, brake pads, wiper blades, air filters, spark plugs, shocks, batteries, everything. It's the most important tool in their wallet. And it's how you're going to help them turn their car into a harder working, better performing, and more reliable vehicle. Whatever you're working on, Advance will help you keep the wheels turning.
Once again, a young soldier killed in Iraq is awarded the nation's highest military honor. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports from the White House.
In a somber ceremony in the East Room, President Bush bestowed the Medal of Honor posthumously on U.S. Army Private First Class Ross McGinnis. He lost his life protecting comrades when a grenade was thrown into their Humvee while on patrol in Baghdad 18 months ago.
Private McGinnis could have easily jumped from the Humvee and saved himself. Instead, he dropped inside, put himself against a grenade, and absorbed the blast with his own body.
The medal for Private McGinnis was accepted by his parents as some of the soldiers whose lives he saved looked on. Mark Noller, CBS News, The White House.
Private McGinnis, who grew up in western Pennsylvania, was just 19 years old. In Iraq, there was a suicide car bombing today at the provincial police headquarters in Mosul. Authorities say at least 9 people were killed, dozens injured. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Hi, I'm the owner of several Italian restaurants, and all my employees are so happy because I now make Aflac available to them. With Aflac, my benefits package is like a full course meal, and there is no direct cost to me. That is like music to my ears.
Call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Fixed rate mortgage or adjustable rate mortgage? Should you flip a coin or is there a better way to decide?
Here's a smart borrower tip, courtesy of the Smart Borrower Center at LendingTree.com.
If you plan on staying in your home at least 5 years, the security of a fixed rate usually makes sense. But if you're not staying that long and adjustable rates are at least 1 point lower than fixed, it can save you a bundle.
For more information and objective advice on lending, visit the Smart Borrower Center at LendingTree.com/smartborrower today or call 1-800-555-TREE for information and licensing.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We're heading into the free speech zone. Your calls and comments welcome on any subject, from any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. The line's open for you toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-573-8372. We're standing by for a call from the brand-new Speaker of the California Assembly. That's Assemblywoman Karen Bass from Los Angeles. And while we wait for the speaker, I'd love to have you get on the line and tell me your ideas for closing the budget gap in Sacramento. If you don't want more cuts in state services, what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to pay a tax on that you don't currently pay? And would you accept reinstatement of the vehicle license fee that was generating somewhere around $4 billion a year when Arnold axed it? The Terminator took a popular stand there that he is paying dearly for in the out years here as we experience budget shortfalls in Sacramento. And what about the proposal for a skin tax? That's right, a tax on porn. An assembly member, Charles Calderon from Los Angeles, has suggested a 25% tax on gross revenues of all producers and distributors of adult entertainment. How much would it produce? I'm not sure. The industry generates about $4 billion a year in revenue, so a 25% tax in broad numbers would... I'm trying not to use a sexual entendre, and my vocabulary is not supporting it. You know what I mean. If you look at it in a general way, there we go, about $1 billion a year could be generated from a 25% tax on porn revenues. And there's also discussion, as we've had with Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi, about extending the sales tax to services, lawyers, accountants, mechanics. Almost any part of the service economy currently untaxed would be subjected to probably a rate the same as the sales tax, but that would be up for discussion, too. So we're now at the first week of June, and there's supposed to be a budget out by the end of this month. Anybody want to take a bet on that? Well, it's probably not a very safe bet. So I ask you for suggestions. What taxes would you raise, and what services would you cut, including the Department of Corrections? I really believe there is a billion or two in savings there if they would simply get rational about sentencing, about parole, and about life prisoners. But as Garamendi told us last week, he said, well, there isn't much appetite for that in Sacramento right now. So what do they have appetite for? I mean, I know a lot of people who'd like to tax aerial spraying of the light brown apple moth at 100%.
but that probably won't fly. So as we're waiting for the speaker, and speakers are very busy. They try to set a schedule, but it's hard to honor them. She may be a few minutes late in joining us. So I invite you to get on the line now. And if you want to make a suggestion to her about tax increases that you're willing to support, about spending cuts that you're willing to support, I'd like to hear from you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Get on the line right now, and who knows, you might be able to talk to the speaker and offer your idea directly to her. But in the meantime, I'd like to hear your calls. Also, if you want to talk about other issues, including the decision to split the babies in Florida and Michigan by the Democratic Rules Committee over the weekend, the bottom line is, the Clinton campaign finally seems to be acknowledging that it's out of gas. And the word is that they're calling the team together for a concession speech in New York tomorrow night after the final primaries in South Dakota and Montana. So if you have a comment on that, I welcome your thoughts. Again, my number is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Here's John in Carmel Valley. Hey, John.
I have a totally different subject. It's just a question. I was over in Aptos in Santa Cruz County last week, and
I believe the locals are very touchy about that, and they prefer Aptos.
Oh, okay, Aptos. Forgive me, locals.
I've been reprimanded before, so I'm just sharing the pain.
Okay, here I am, just living 30 miles away, and I'm embarrassed if I got it wrong.
Okay.
Anyway. Here I am in liberal land, so to speak, maybe the most left-leaning of all the counties, and I see this pickup truck parked with a sticker in the back that I've never seen before, and it's a GOP elephant peeing on liberals. And when I saw that, I thought, is that a commentary of liberals saying that the GOP pisses on them, or is it the other way around? It's a guy saying, you know what, to you liberals.
Uh-huh.
And I suspected it was the latter, and I thought this. I thought if I lived in Pebble Beach and I had a liberal doing that to a bunch of Republicans, I would fear for my personhood or more than that. What do you think?
Well, I would have to say, without having seen it or absorbed the context, John, that your second guess is probably accurate, that this was a crude statement of power by a Republican or Republican-leaning individual. And, you know, it's one of those things that I deplore because it doesn't do anybody any good. You know, it just hardens positions, aggravates people, and does not produce anything valuable. But it is that kind of expression that many people on the right feel entitled to. And as we were discussing earlier with Rory O'Connor, I think that right-wing shock radio gives people implicit permission to be outrageous, to lay out insults to people who don't agree with them, and to take positions that are self-righteous and condescending all at the same time.
Have you seen that sticker? It's a sticker. It's not something this guy cooked up.
No, I haven't.
It was new to me. By the way, is Ron Paul still in the race?
He is. He is still a candidate, and he's planning to conduct some sort of action at the convention in Minneapolis, and he wants to speak, and I think that he expects to, to be part of the nominating process. He doesn't expect to win it.
Thank you. I'm listening again to your program. I took a hiatus, and I'm enjoying it very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, John. Good to have you back. And people are entitled to take a vacation, a hiatus. We understand that, but do rejoin us when you have the opportunity. 14 minutes past the hour, we are still, Katrina is diligently trying to track down Speaker Karen Bass there somewhere in the Capitol in Sacramento. If we reach her, we're going to ask her about the budget shortfall and what the Democratic strategy is to deal with it. In the meantime, your calls and comments are welcome here. If you want to talk about the California budget and ways that you would break the deadlock, either by increasing revenues, yes, that's tax increase terminology, or by
cutting spending. Yes, that means cutting education, cutting prisons, cutting health care, and really cutting beyond the bone into California's spending and its investment. And as you've heard with Lieutenant Governor Garamendi on our program recently, he's most concerned that we are cutting our investments in higher education. And for the short-term gain of Arnold Schwarzenegger being able to say, I didn't raise taxes, we are setting back the progress of the state of California for the long term. And I see that as a very disastrous trade-off, and that's why I welcome your ideas about how to keep government afloat. Inevitably, with a $16, $17 billion gap, there will be cuts, and I'm realistic about that. Nobody wants to see them, but they are likely to hit. And I believe that we do need tax increases, and I'm prepared to send more money to Sacramento. Are you? Josh in Salinas, welcome. You're on the air.
Peter, as I've said so many times before, calling into your show, please tell the Speaker of the House what we need is to get rid of Prop 13 for corporate property.
Yeah.
Corporations are like vampires. They don't get old. They don't die of old age. They don't retire. They can't get too old to pay the mortgage, the tax on their home, because they don't have a home.
Well, I fully agree with you. And the example I have used is that almost every community in California has a Macy's store. And Macy's has changed corporate hands three or four times since the 1980s. But because they sold the whole corporation, it did not trigger a property tax reassessment of all of its properties in California. So as far as I know, Macy's is enjoying tax rates that it paid in 1977. And that is just one of those loopholes. If we closed it, California would have a much healthier revenue stream. It would not wobble up and down wildly as we have seen it in the last few years because it is so heavily based on incomes right now. And it would put us on a footing that could make us, you know, much more competitive and give us the ability to make the kind of investments in education and higher education that will make us competitive in the future.
That's right. What we have here is legal discrimination against human beings. What does Macy's have that we don't have?
Yeah. All right, Josh. Well, thank you. You and I are in agreement. Shall we just go up to Sacramento and take over?
Absolutely.
Okay. You got to buy the gas, though.
All right, I drive a Prius.
Oh, good for you. You've planned ahead. Thank you, Josh. 888-5 Peter B. We've just learned that Speaker Bass is in a meeting, and it's not likely she'll be able to join us, but they haven't ruled it out entirely. So that means it's you and me. Grab a line and give me a call. Let me know what's on your mind. Presidential politics, California budget, surveillance cameras all over the place, shock jocks in talk radio, or bring up something of your own. You know how to do that. 888-5 Peter B. That's my toll-free number. My lines are wide open for you now. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
In the Monterey County Courts, there are 8 criminal cases for every 1 civil case. That means we need a judge who's an expert in criminal trials. Mark Hood is the only candidate who has 19 years' experience as a criminal prosecutor. He has an unmatched record for integrity, fairness, and knowledge. Mark Hood is endorsed by law enforcement, including the Monterey County Deputy Sheriff's Association. On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge.
I'm Mark Hood, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Mark Hood judge.
Our schools are in trouble. Healthcare is a mess. The economy is broken. I get it. But we can get California back on track. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm running for state assembly because we can't send more politicians to Sacramento. I'm a leader in a group fighting foreign corporate control of our water, and we're winning. I was twice elected to our local school board, balancing budgets in tough times and seeing that kids didn't fall through the cracks. I started a green technology business, creating jobs with full health care benefits. And I was trained in making good public policy by Leon Panetta at the Panetta Institute. We can do a better job in California. We can grow our economy by investing in college education and green technology. But we need leaders who get it and who can get the job done. I'm Barbara Springer, and I'm ready to get the job done for all of us. I would be honored to have your vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd. This message was paid for by my campaign, Springer 2008.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
I'm Jane Parker, and I'm running for Monterey County Supervisor. When Monterey County needed help on the problem of child abuse, I helped bring together schools, law enforcement, and social service providers. In the space of just 4 months, we developed a successful new program to protect children that helped hundreds of families in the first year. As supervisor, I'll tackle the problem of gang violence. We need to bring our communities together to keep our neighborhoods safe and our kids out of trouble. Learn more at electjaneparker.com and vote for me, Jane Parker, for supervisor on June 3rd.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start you off in Boulder Creek, Highway 9 northbound before Pacific Avenue. Be on the lookout for a big tree branch in the roadway. For Prunedale Meridian Road at Dyer Road, still have reports of a jackknife truck blocking the roadway as you go up the hill, so be prepared for delays there. Southern Monterey County, southbound 1 at Big Sur. This is actually just north of Lucia. We have an overturned SUV on its side in the southbound lanes. Emergency crews on the scene now. You may see some delays as you approach the area. King City, northbound 101 before Halone Road. A big white object apparently between the lanes. Drive with caution there. Highway 68, no stalls, no accidents. 17 Santa Cruz Mountains, currently checking in problem-free. This is brought to you by your genuine Toyota service departments. Toyota owners through June buy four tires matched to your Toyota by their trained technicians and receive a gas card worth $50. Road hazard coverage included. Visit participating Toyota dealers for details. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Actually, this is more what I was looking for. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, come on, everybody, get heading to the spin. Now that he's been in for however long it's been. Grin a good old grin, tuck in your second chin. And everybody do the Clinton. Come on and slide over to the middle.
Over to the middle.
Straighten up and step line.
Up and step line.
Lean it to the left a little. Now lean a lot to the right.
Lot to the
come
right.
On and take a definite position.
Definite position.
Now do a total turnabout.
Total turnabout.
Shake your finger at the media. See how good they'll be to you.
Everybody do the Clinton.
Well, it appears the end game is in sight for the Hillary Clinton for President campaign. She has summoned top donors and backers to attend her New York speech tomorrow night, which is the final night of the primaries. Montana and South Dakota bringing up the rear. She had a victory, a 62% win in Puerto Rico on Sunday. And this is a move that is widely interpreted to mean she plans to suspend her campaign and endorse Barack Obama, if not tomorrow night, within a couple of days. Obama and Clinton spoke on Sunday night, this is news to me, and agreed that their staffs should begin negotiations over post-primary activities, according to reliable sources. In addition to seeking Obama's help in raising money to pay off some $20 million-plus in debts, Clinton is known to want Obama to assist black officials who endorsed her and are now taking constituent heat, including in some cases primary challenges from pro-Obama politicians. One donor said this has never happened before, referring to the personalized request by email to attend the event in New York on Tuesday night. So that does appear to be the signal that the curtains will be drawing, but I will wait and see. I don't know about you. 888-5-PETER-B, and we've got Ann in Carmel Valley. Thanks for calling, Ann.
Hi, Peter. I've got some ideas on how we can reduce the budget.
All right, tell me.
I've got three ideas. Okay, one is to require the farmers that are selling off their subsidized water to return the profit to the state coffers.
Okay, so how do we do that? We charge them market rate for the water?
Well, whatever they sell it for, what we've already...
So if they resell the water?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it.
That forces them to at least grow some crops, food crops. We need them.
Okay.
Okay, then we should repeal the three strikes law.
Oh, amen.
Non-violent offenders.
Yep.
And then let the non-violent offenders that are were in prison because of this law out of the prisons,
mm-hmm.
and put them to work installing solar panels to all the government buildings and housing projects, and then we can turn around and sell that electricity back to the power companies.
do you have a clean record? Could we run you for governor?
Oh, that's the problem. I'm too clean.
Oh, you're too clean.
That's the deal. Okay.
Well, I think these are great ideas. Now, I don't know how much water is being resold, but I am aware that it happens. And this is subsidized water from the Central Valley Project.
We're paying for it.
Yep, yep. And
so it's as far as I'm concerned, he's getting paid on my nickel.
Repealing three strikes is a very rational idea, and if more voters thought the way you do, we'd be in much better shape.
That's why I'm not governor, huh?
Okay, and thanks for calling.
All righty, bye.
Great ideas, and if you want to help out as we try to fix the budget here, feel free to call in and chime in at 888-5-PETER-B. Laird joins us from Eureka. Welcome, Laird.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Pretty good, thanks.
First of all, I did not call about the book.
Well, you've been a winner too many times, huh?
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And that's out of the way. Actually, I called, one of the very first calls I made to you, I called and said that I think that the truth is out there, to use a hackneyed cliche.
Mm-hmm.
People just have to look for it. And we had a little difference of opinion on that. And I still maintain that if people are interested in knowing what's going on, they need to open their eyes and look. Don't just fix on one channel. Don't fix on one newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a magazine in a dentist's office. Listen to your car radio news instead of the music. All
now,
that kind of stuff.
Laird, you're sounding very sensible today. Why on earth did I disagree with you at the time?
Because I was so insistent that it wasn't the media's fault.
Oh, I see. Well, I understand that point, and I have made the point, perhaps you haven't heard it, but I give equal fault to the media, to our political leaders, and to the average American.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And I believe that, yes, there are many sins of the media, and they continue to sin right in front of us on a daily basis, and there are many sins of politicians. But I don't dispute your point that most of the information, for example, that Scott McClellan is peddling in his new book, is out there. We've been talking about it on this program for years. And, yes, a lot of the information is available to people, even if they would just move their TV channel beyond American Idol or their favorite movie cable channel and spend a little time at C-SPAN or, you know, even hold your nose and watch Fox. You're right. You can get information there if you want to. Laird, I got to run to a break. You're making sense today. Keep doing it, all right? 888-5-PETER-B. Your calls and comments are welcome. It's the Free Speech Zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Grab a podcast at peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market in Delhi, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
California is in crisis. Healthcare, education, and budget woes are crippling this state. My name is Dr. Stephen Barkalow, and I'm running for state assembly. I've been in practice for over 30 years. I've been keeping a budget, making payroll, and solving problems for my patients every day. My family and yours face the same issues in this rapidly changing economy. These problems are urgent and personal, and we can no longer afford to wait for change. I want to put California back on top. I want our children to have the best education available, and I want health care to be accessible and affordable to everyone in California. I have the expertise to get this job done. I am the only candidate in this race who can make an immediate, tangible difference in your life around the issues of health care. And if we make just this one change, we can turn our budget around. It's going to take guts and tenacity, not political rhetoric.
Your vote can make a difference. Vote for Stephen Barkalow on June 3rd for the 27th District State Assembly seat.
My name is Dr. Stephen Barkalow, and I approve this message.
Oh, excuse me, I pushed the wrong button here. I'm doing that a lot today.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
All right, this is right.
Did you ever have to make up your mind? Pick up one woman and leave the other behind. It's not often easy, not often kind. Did you ever have to make up your mind?
Well, it seems like Hillary Clinton has made up her mind. The interpretation is that by calling her supporters for a gathering in New York tomorrow night after the final Tuesday primary, she will concede or suspend her campaign and seek peace and unity with the Obama campaign. And I'd like to hear your reaction. I watched part of the Rules Committee coverage on Saturday.
But because of a long-standing pledge for domestic tranquility, I don't watch a lot of political programming on the weekends at our house. So I did sneak in views of part of it, and I came away really distressed because the Clinton supporters, and Harold Ickes in particular, were playing a game that's very insulting. They're trying to draw on the roots of democracy, that we should count every vote. And they wanted to blow past all of the issues that made the Florida and Michigan primaries problematic. That neither Obama nor Clinton was supposed to have their name on the ballot. Both of them more or less honored the pledge not to campaign in those two states. And in my view, the Clinton campaign tried to pull a fast one or didn't honor its commitments, you choose, by leaving the senator's name on the ballot in Michigan, where she rolled up 55-60% of the vote. The other candidates were Kucinich, who got less than 5%, and a category called other, or something like that, that got about 40%. And while I'm not that happy at this split-the-baby outcome, because I don't think these problems could be fixed, you can't roll back the time machine to January and say, well, this is what Michigan voters would have done, this is what Florida voters would have done. But I accept the compromise as the best under the circumstances. And yet Harold Ickes and other Clinton supporters were threatening to vote for McCain, threatening to take this to the Credentials Committee at the convention and keep the fight going. And as one critic said, they wanted to move the goalposts here at the end of the game. And I'm hopeful that this is going to be water under the bridge, over the dam, whichever phrase you prefer. But there are Clinton supporters who have really hardened over this. They feel cheated. They feel the DNC cheated them. And I'm sorry, when they reach that conclusion, they're not being intellectually honest about the process that led to the sanctions against Florida and Michigan for holding their primaries in January. And tonight, I'll be sitting in for John Elliott on Air America. You can listen online at airamerica.com. I'll be live from 8 to 11 p.m. Pacific time. And in the second hour, my guests will include Thomas Gengale. And Tom Gengale has written a detailed book about the primary process in this country. We'll talk with him about these issues and about the concept here of moving the goalposts at the end of the contest. But I think one of the things that will surface from this is that every state, including California, that moved up its primary regrets it. And just think, California has a primary tomorrow that doesn't include the presidential candidates because we did that in February. And think what it would mean if California's presidential primary were in fact being held tomorrow. We'd be the deciding state. And so I'm hopeful that this process long term will lead to an honest restructuring of the primary system and the insulting superdelegates who are there to keep the little people from making the wrong decision. That's got to go. And we need to clear up the process because most of us didn't realize until we saw what happened in California the way the delegates are allocated. And essentially, Barack Obama has been the untouchable leader in this campaign because of the way those delegates are split. And I think it's fair to argue that Clinton should have gotten more of a bounce out of states like Pennsylvania, West Virginia. And so I think we need an honest reevaluation. Not sure it's going to happen. Depends on who wins and whether they're committed to good government or self-preservation. That's the number one instinct in politics. So join me if you can tonight on Air America. We'll also be talking with Jonathan Haffetz from the Brennan Center at New York University about the new reports of renditions that have occurred since the president said we weren't going to do that anymore. That's where we snatch suspects without trial, without any process. And it's now learned that some of these people have been detained on U.S. warships. So we'll be talking about that tonight on Air America. Join me if you can, 8 to 11 p.m. Pacific time at airamerica.com. Susan in Soquel, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yeah, hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Okay, you?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you.
Good.
Pretty good. I was at a table in a cafe this morning when somebody came up with this idea to raise taxes on all alcoholic beverages.
Okay.
Which I think is a great idea because I'm watching all kinds of kids drink so much that I can't even stand it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. And another was to not put some of these people in jail in the first place.
Okay. I'm with you there.
Huh? Yeah,
I'm with you there.
Have them on, with those cuffs on them, instead if they need to be monitored.
Oh, an electronic leash.
Yeah, whatever you call it, electronic ankle bracelet.
Right, yeah.
Well, whatever you call it, something like that would help. And I also think maybe we should be reexamining this elite Board of Regents and state university system. I think it skims a lot of money, and I don't think it puts enough money into localities that they occupy. And anyway,
I don't think the regents themselves get paid.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's not the regents, but these folks on the top of the system.
Oh, the administrators pulling down half a million?
They get huge salaries, and I don't know what for.
Well, they claim they have to do that to be competitive with other institutions, and those other institutions say they have to overpay to be competitive with corporate, and then government steps in and tries to jack up salaries. So it is a problem. It's hard to rationalize that the new chancellor at Berkeley deserves a moving allowance, a car, and heavy repairs to the mansion that
right.
they give him and all that stuff at a time when fees and other expenses for students are going up at 10% a year or more.
Okay, now watch that Mercury retrograde. Peter, that's probably why you're pushing all the wrong buttons.
Really? Let me push this one and see what happens.
That was easy.
Well, have a really great evening, Peter.
All right, Susan.
All
thank
right,
you for the
later.
Call.
Bye-bye.
888-5 Peter B. Now, you drinkers, are you ready to pay more taxes on beer, wine, and spirits? Honestly, I love my wine. I'm a proud consumer of California wines, and I wouldn't mind paying 5% more, 10% more. I do think that we have to respect that there are points of diminishing returns when you impose taxes on what are called sins, whether it's booze or sex or gambling, cigarettes. You can go too far. And I think that we do have to look at a sense of fairness and not just exploit certain groups that are below a majority, like smokers, and keep jamming more and more taxes on them. So I think that there is a point of equity that we have to look at. And what we've seen in recent years is that tax increases go to the group that is least organized, least lobbyized, least likely to give contributions to elected officials. And that's not a rational or intelligent way to fund our governments, but that's how we do it. 888-5 Peter B. Any subject, any viewpoint, give me a call. You can also suggest ways to cut the budget or increase taxes in California to try to achieve a balanced budget over in Sacramento. Ben and Salinas, welcome. How are you, Ben?
You know, Peter, in keeping monitors on what all the right-wing America haters have been saying all day on the air, this is the message that's coming through. The savage sissy, he's on the last 2 hours, all the his white people that really are rather racist, every one of them says, a couple said they're going to vote for Obama. You know what he says? Why do you hate your race? Why, if you're voting for Obama, are you black? And then they go, well, no, but I believe in, oh, then you must hate, why do you hate your race? And on the other right-wing station, the guy is saying, oh, if the black people can vote for Obama with pride, the white people can vote for somebody white with pride. And you know, all this separation, and I'm getting a weird premonition, I said before, and I pray it doesn't come true. That premonition is this. And the U.S. News and World Report edition, January of 2009, the article in bold print on front might just say how the Dems blew the election.
Well, I don't want to see that headline.
I don't. You know what? I would pray on my. I'm going to go into mourning and pray a few rosaries right now that it doesn't come true. But you know what? If enough of this confusion prevails, they don't have to steal many of the fringe areas to give us. Scalia will say we can't count the votes because it'll stop the McCain presidency. And then where are we?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to stop that machine? Pelosi won't.
Well, Ben. Your concerns, to the extent that they rise to the level of fears, I think are warranted, because we have seen the Democratic Party blow it before, and they're not listening on a number of key issues, on the war, on surveillance,
impeachment.
On impeachment, and on the economy.
You know what, Peter, I'll end by saying this. There is something about eternal vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. You got it, Ben. Appreciate your call. 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to join us. Just a couple of program notes. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to be traveling on Thursday to Minneapolis, and my friend Peter Laufer will be sitting in. He's got a new book out, co-authored with Marcos Kounalakis, that's based on their Washington Monthly radio show that those gentlemen co-host, and it's called Hope is a Tattered Flag, Voices of Reason and Change for the Post-Bush Era. So Peter Laufer will be sitting in for me on Thursday. Then on Friday, we will be live from Minneapolis, the National Conference on Media Reform. We've got a whole range of great guests that we'll be talking with, too numerous to mention, but it's quite a stellar crew. And we'll also do a special live broadcast in San Francisco from Minneapolis on Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. on Green 960 in San Francisco. And so that's what we'll be doing in Minneapolis Friday and Saturday. Then I'm going to sneak in some vacation time in the Midwest, visit family in Detroit, and my mother, who's been ailing recently, in Cincinnati. And while I'm in Cincinnati, I decided to take the opportunity to broadcast from behind the Reds curtain. Reds referring to the baseball team and also the incredible conservative machine, which was one of the reasons why I didn't want to stay in Cincinnati when I graduated from high school. So Paul Hackett, who some of you recall, ran unsuccessfully for Congress and then was running for Senate when the Democratic machine brutally ejected him. He's going to be among my guests from Cincinnati. And interesting, I'll just share this with you, that I've been emailing Paul Hackett, requesting an interview, and he's been resisting. He has finally agreed to do it, but in the process, he expressed a great frustration with the system. He saw very little difference, I infer, from his observations of Obama and Clinton, and he's not too optimistic about change occurring, even with a Democratic presidency. So I think you'll hear some very interesting remarks from Paul Hackett. And next week, while I'm taking time off in the Midwest, Brad Friedman will be sitting in on Monday, Tuesday, and we think Thursday and Friday, live from Los Angeles. So that's what's ahead for us. We're going to take a quick break and return for your phone calls at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And you can email me, Peter at peterbcollins.com. This program is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Visit our website at peterbcollins.com. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Fun.
Well, checking traffic for the final time this evening on KRXA, and a couple of things still out there. Live Oak in Santa Cruz County, Cabrillo Avenue at Winkle Avenue. A broken down car partially blocks the roadway. Southern Monterey County, they're still working on clearing out a crash. Southbound 1 just north of Lucia. This is down in the Big Sur area. It's an overturned SUV. It's on its side in the southbound lane. Fire department on the scene. Looks like they've downgraded this to minor injuries, but it's taken a long time for a tow truck to get down there. King City, northbound 101 before Halone Road. Car swerving to avoid a large white object that's between the lanes there. And in Prunedale, Meridian Road at Dyer Road, perhaps still have a jackknife truck that's blocking the roadway. CHP is on the scene working to get that moved out of the way. This report brought to you by Super 8. After a great night's sleep, you'll find it easy to fuel up for the day ahead with Super 8's Superstart Continental Breakfast. Enjoy coffee, baked goods, and more. Go to Super8.com. See you along the way. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix with traffic on KRXA.
My name is Donna Shore, and my husband, Todd Hornick, is running in the June 3rd election for Superior Court Judge. Todd is a loving and caring husband and father of our two boys, Tarak and Nilan. Todd Hornick is a dedicated prosecutor with a sincere passion for the law and justice. He has used his legal career to advocate on behalf of victims of crimes and to secure necessary punishments for those who violate the law and threaten our safety. Todd's energy and enthusiasm for the courtroom is matched by his knowledge of the law. As an educator for the California Department of Parks and Recreation and the California District Attorneys Association, Todd teaches law to law enforcement cadets and experienced attorneys from around the state. My husband, Todd Hornick, has the comprehensive support of the law enforcement community, and he is the best choice for judge, beyond a reasonable doubt. Learn more at ToddHornickForJudge.com.
I'm Todd Hornick, and I approve this message.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I've been watching you for days now, baby. I just love your sanctuary now, baby. You know my love will never stop now, baby. Just put your love in my box now, baby. Wrap it up. I'll take it. Wrap it up. I'll take it.
I've still got room for your phone call, and I'm talking to you. Pick up that fancy iPhone and dial in right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And you can always email me. That's Peter at PeterBCollins.com. One of our stalwarts, whose name is on the ballot in Humboldt County, joins us now. That's Jake Pickering. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Peter B. Thank you very much.
That's right. And I can't make cash contributions to campaigns, but I like to support good people running for office.
Oh, that's okay. I'll take publicity. That's fine. Hey, I do think it is time for a radical reordering of the way the Democratic Party nominates its presidential candidate. And, as somebody who's running for the Democratic Central Committee, here's the way I think we should do it. First of all, this process, this five-month-long process from when Iowa votes until when South Dakota and Montana vote tomorrow is way too long.
Yeah.
I think we could shorten it up to 3 months. And this deal with you have an Iowa, New Hampshire vote first always really is not fair to the rest. Those two states are not representative of America,
right,
by and large.
Okay. I agree.
I think we should have rotating regional primaries. You know, maybe start this thing in March. I mean, making people vote in Iowa, New Hampshire in January anyway was cruel enough. Punishment, so
yeah.
Hold there.
Yeah.
We should start this in March and go through June and just, every week have, three or four states vote And that way I think it'd be much more fair and just, you know, change the order every election so that nobody feels left out in terms of being first. And we've got a situation where we're, you know, breaking the rules to jump ahead of each other. So the thing that's real obvious, and I think most Democrats can't agree by this point, is these superdelegates have to go. There's no reason the Democratic Party should have superdelegates. So why is that having an elected official, basically it should be one man, one vote. That's the principle of democracy. And giving these elected officials extra power really is not democratic at all, Peter B.
Well, you make a lot of good proposals there, Jake, and I want to recommend a book to you. The author, as I teased or mentioned, is going to be on with me on Air America tonight. His name is Thomas Gangale, G-A-N-G-A-L-E. And he's a retired military guy, and he's written a book called From the Primaries to the Polls, How to Repair America's Broken Presidential Nomination Process. And it's wonkish and detailed with a lot of math, so I hope that doesn't turn you off. But he goes into great detail, and he proposes a scheme called the American Plan that is very much like what you proposed. He calls for a series of regional primaries. And in those regions, you would have, you know, some small states, some big states. It would try to be controlled for diversity so that in each primary round, which would be on the first Tuesday of succeeding months, you would go to a different part of the country. I don't know that shifting the order from one election year to the next was included in his proposal, but I think it's a good idea. And it called for essentially ratcheting up so that you do start with smaller states and regions that permit the kind of retail politicking that is interesting and valuable in New Hampshire and Iowa. But it takes it to other states so that there is more diversity, and not just racial diversity, but you know, all kinds of balance, so that we don't wind up with really minority white populations in states like New Hampshire and Iowa really wagging the tail of this dog. And I believe, I have to go back to the book and refresh my memory, but I think that he talks about the history of the superdelegates, and they came out of the conventions that were so troublesome in 68 and 72, where these insurgent actions, first for McGovern, and then there was the whole issue over Willie Brown getting seated with the California delegation. So there were many battles that led to this mess that we have today, where the delegates are not assigned purely by the popular vote, and ultimately the superdelegates have the potential to veto the intentions of the rank-and-file voters.
Right, and then really that's the reason why the superdelegates were put in 1982. As Geraldine Ferraro, who's one of the people who helped create the superdelegates, explained, it was a way for the party elders, the people who supposedly know more than the average person, pick the...
You're breaking up a little there, Jake. Don't move your head at all.
Oh, sorry. I do like the idea that the smaller states go first. That way, you know, it's not over before it began.
Well, and it doesn't require...
Until June, we would have had the final say in this race.
Right. And if you have smaller states in the groups at the beginning, it doesn't require as much money for candidates to be viable in the early stages when you have more candidates running.
Right. If somebody does poorly in the early states, stay in the and hope they...
Right. Jake, I got to drop you. You're breaking up beyond recognition. I'll just say this, that I know many of you faithful listeners to this program are very upset with Nancy Pelosi about impeachment, failure to end the war. And that frustration is quite justified. But I have to say that I think she's done a very good job of navigating these minefields of the primary process and the twin polls of Obama and Clinton. And while I think she's secretly an Obama supporter, I think she's disguised it very well. And I think that she's made it clear that there will not be an ongoing dispute during the summer, and it appears that signal has been received by the Clinton campaign. And so in that respect, I think Pelosi's done a good job, and she resisted the temptation to bigfoot the voters and allow her power as speaker and other superdelegates to overrule our choice. I think that's good.
Happy trails to you.
Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'll be on Air America tonight, airamerica.com, and back here tomorrow at the same time, same great stations.
Keep smiling.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. No talk of quitting from Hillary Clinton, but her husband, speaking to an audience in South Dakota, hinted that the end is near.
This may be the last day I'm ever involved in a campaign of this kind.
South Dakota and Montana hold the final contests of the primary season tomorrow. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato covered Clinton's campaign appearance in Rapid City.
Clinton supporters couldn't wait to see her at a restaurant here, but spoke as if Barack Obama has won.
If that's the way it ends up, they'll support the Democratic candidate.
This woman, Jennifer Bauman Holick, wouldn't back Obama right now.
He talks well, he says all the right things, but I just don't feel confident.
Clinton tried boosting spirits.
I really was impressed by the downtown and all of the sculptures that you're placing on every corner.
She wishes there would be one of her here someday. They're sculptures of presidents. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Rapid City, South Dakota.
Barack Obama says he called Clinton and proposed a meeting when the dust settles.
There are a lot of superdelegates who are waiting for the last couple of contests, but I think that they're going to be making decisions fairly quickly after that.
CBS News has learned that most of the 17 uncommitted superdelegates in the Senate will soon commit to Obama, along with at least a dozen members of the House. Ted Kennedy took the first step in his treatment today. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula reports.
A success. That's how doctors here at the Duke University Medical Center are terming Senator Ted Kennedy's brain surgery. The operation to treat his cancerous brain tumor lasted about 3.5 hours. Kennedy is expected to stay at Duke for a week and then head home to Boston for further treatment, including radiation and chemotherapy. Jim Krasula, CBS News, Durham, North Carolina.
Bo Diddley died today. He was one of the original rock and rollers.
Me and Chuck Berry, we're the two dudes that came out of Chess Records and changed the whole course of the electric guitar.
And it wasn't only the music, it was the stage presence.
I am the dude that Elvis Presley ripped off for all of the leg wiggling.
But Anthony DeCurtis of Rolling Stone magazine says Bo Diddley's real legacy is the music.
There was a very African kind of feel to the rhythmic, propulsion in his sound. And, with the death of Bo Diddley, there's